Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I am hanging in there. Thank you. Jeff, it's almost Thanksgiving, and we wanted to dedicate this intro to mention all the things that we are thankful for, and if it's cool with you, can we go back and forth like Jadakiss and Styles?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to be Jadakiss.
So you're going to go to sleep and not wake up until the episode is over?
Yeah, I'm going to start singing New Edition songs in the middle.
Oh, my God. For everyone who listened to last week's episode, I'm thankful for you.
Yeah.
I am thankful, Jeff, for everything that you bring to the table for this podcast, all the booking, all the research, all the jokes, and all your energy. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I am thankful for you editing the podcast so that I don't have to. You have put in more hours listening to every every vocal tick. Every time that Cardo Got Wings was doing a new voice and you had to adjust the sound on that.
Oh.
All of that, I am thankful for that.
All right. I am very thankful for all of you out there who have been listening to our podcast, whether it's been 2.5 years, whether it's been just 2 episodes, and I am thankful for all of you who have hit us up saying, hey, when is Cardi B going to be on the podcast? Hey, when is Maino going to be on the podcast? Hey, when is Mike Posner going to be on the podcast?
And it's like all these things have already happened.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for us already making those things happen.
Yeah.
I am thankful for Man's Not Hot,
Michael Dapa, right?
Yeah. I'm thankful for him doing the interview as Michael Dapa and not as Men's Not Hot guy for an hour and a half.
I am thankful that no one's entourage has left here with anything that was not theirs in the first place.
Actually, we don't know if the Migos, anybody...
All right, well, let's just assume and move forward.
Yeah. I am thankful for Joe Budden and his entire entourage, each member of whom has come on this podcast and kept our podcast afloat.
That's right.
I'm talking about Joe, Rory, Maul __,
mm-hmm.
Nadeska,
right.
Ice.
Yes.
We're coming for Tahiri. We're coming for Sin. We're coming for the baby.
Baby Budden.
I would get Academics. I would get Chops.
Just anybody within that circle, it does really well for us. Great great numbers for this podcast. I am thankful for 2 Chainz, who gave us Nah For Real when he responded to our tweet one night saying that if you are a DJ and you cut off Champions before 2 Chainz verse, you're an asshole.
That is true.
Nah For Real to all of our real fans out there.
I am thankful for Johnny Nunez, our favorite photographer, who came over and was so happy with the interview that he gave us a gift of a photo of Jay and Nas squashing their beef, which we have yet to frame, but we will, and that will be up in our apartment soon.
Jeff, I am thankful for the construction workers finally stopping their construction.
For the moment.
For now.
Because they were done for 2 months, and now they're back.
They're back!
I'm thankful for no sirens at the moment,
mm-hmm.
But really I'm thankful for anybody who can tell our voices apart.
Oh, that is nice. That is always, always a nice thing to hear.
Yeah.
Jeff, I am thankful for Estelle Mata and Lenny S. for so many things, but especially for making that Rockefeller podcast happen at Highline Ballroom, which we sold out, and you guys should check out that video on YouTube right now.
I am thankful for all the friends we've made because of this podcast, whether our guests or people who actually listen to the podcast, including Your Song Sucks out in Florida, Drom, Post Malone, Tyler out in North Idaho.
And on and on and on. I am thankful for everybody who joins in on our Instagram Live and jumps in with comments and questions and is engaged and really appreciates what we do, whether it's music, whether it's podcasting, whether it's live shows, whether it's books, whether it's TV. We really, really, really appreciate you.
I am so thankful for any guest that comes on time. Because, especially, like, you know, I want to thank, like, Ted Smooth, on time.
Cardo Got Wings,
on time. Theophilus London, on time.
Yeah, months later. I am thankful, Jeff, for our neighbors for never, ever, ever having a problem with the fact that we have all these people running through the apartment and screaming AKAs and doing gunshots week after week.
Actually, I'm really thankful for the landlords who don't know that this is going on.
I'm thankful to anybody who subscribed to fullscreen.com while we were over there, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, actually,
if anyone's still there because
it's shutting down in January, we have outlasted Fullscreen.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that we don't cook for our guests anymore.
I was going to say that. Thank God. Imagine we had to do a full like turkey episode for this week.
No, it would probably be like salmon. We like doing salmon for all of our guests. Anyway, I'm thankful for this week's guest, Ted Smooth, hey, the remix king. Yes. He is a longtime friend, a longtime fan, and we are so happy to have him and his story on our podcast.
Man, he talks about pitching in the Little League World Series, learning from his brother DJ Ray Double R. He talks about battling cool DJ Red Alert,
woo,
and fronting on Kid Capri,
woo,
and beating out Funkmaster Flex for the most desired piece of vinyl in Manhattan.
Woo.
Jeff, we get into all of his club bangers, like his work with Lumi D,
his work with Beyonce,
his work with Fabolous and Jadakiss.
You know, he has the intro on Friday on Elm Street, their upcoming album, soon streaming on Def Jam. It's
hey,
actually coming out.
All that, so much more, like the genesis of the One Blood beat. I mean, there's so much crazy stuff in this episode. We are very thankful that you guys are here and listening to this one. We hope you'll go back and check our whole catalog. Go to itsthereal.com/shop for any merch. Go stream our music. Do all that stuff, guys. We really, really appreciate you. Jeff, when do you want to get into this?
Right after I thank everybody for...
Oh, we already did that.
...leaving a review on iTunes, and I will be so much more thankful when they do that.
When do you want to get into this?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Hollow Points, a.k.a. Republican Agenda.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Dying Motherfucking Legend, a.k.a. John.
Yo, it's DJ Tesmo, the Remix King, Big Dog Pitbull, a.k.a. the Fourth Rosenthal, a.k.a. Young Money Shot, a.k.a. the East Harlem Unicorn, a.k.a. 52 to the Booth, a.k.a. Kicks, Watches, and Cars, a.k.a. I Cook Better Than Your Mom, a.k.a. Ty's Dad, a.k.a. You Want Me to Stop the AKAs? No, one more, a.k.a. the Remix King.
Yeah, this is the way some of this.
I practiced that.
Ted!
What's up?
Ted, what's happening?
I'm excited.
Wow.
Yo, Ted, you gotta come in here with the same energy, though.
Oh my,
you know?
God. Legendary.
Damn.
Last night we went and heard the Freddy versus Jason, or it's like, what is it?
They changed it to Friday on Elm Street.
The new Fab and Jada album.
Kill.
And they sit down in front of microphones and they're telling about each record. And the first record that they play, they say, is produced by Ted Smooth.
Kill.
And do you understand, like, how many people out there are looking forward to this project and want that real New York rap, and then a real New York producer comes on with the first track and it sounds so New York?
Yeah, it's humbling. The funny thing is that I submitted that last year. So that album, they were supposed to do it last year for Halloween.
Yep.
And I was all excited, and, you know, I went back and forth with Fab, sending him the beat, and he's like, nah, you know, I like the second part, but I don't like the first thing. We went back again and back and forth, and the third time, he was like, third time's a charm, and I was like, yes. So I'm all happy, and it never happened. I was like, ah, fuck this bullshit. So I literally...
Did they tell you that the album was not happening, or do you just, like, get
it
to
just
the day
didn't happen.
And you're like...
Halloween came, yeah, and there was, like, knocks on the door for Trick or Treat, and it wasn't Fab and Jadakiss.
Right.
So I was like, all right, it's not going to happen, and I moved on. I'm like, whatever, because I always bump into Jadakiss at the gas station up there in Riverdale, and I'm like, all right, I'll bump into him at some point. And it never happened. So I actually have the DM. This is why I tell people, always check your DMs, because you never know, it'd be some weird shit.
Right.
But so, all right, right here we go. Molly the Martian, 6 weeks ago. I'll let you read it.
I think they're using the joint for FVJ, Let's Speak Tomorrow. And then you were very surprised.
I said, what?
Freddy versus Jason.
You see the question marks. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, So then he says Freddy and Jason. I'm like, whoa. So that's 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So now, and of course, the album is due in a month. And I'm like, all right. So I know the process of, you know, sample clearance and, you know, and I'm like, what? So what I did, I can talk about what I did, right?
Yeah.
So what I did, what I'm going for the intro. I'm like, fuck that. I'm a go for the intro. So I took some of something from the Freddy movie, right? And something from the Jason movie. And I don't even fuck with these movies at all. I can't tell you nothing about these movies. So I'm like, okay, but I know 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I go and I take that part as the beginning of the track, right? And so I'm chopping shit up and I'm putting it on B, because, you know, those noises, the bong, bong, they're all over the place. So I'm doing that, and then coming at your door, when I will never sleep again, the beat drops right there. So I'm thinking, like, you know, fucking theatrics. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
So that's how I lay the beat out. Then I give Fab, I don't know, I put the beat for like 2 minutes. Then after that, it goes into some weird sounding noises from the Jason shit, which is now Jadakiss' part. So, and then I let the sample play, and then I chop a sample, and it just starts repeating. Then the fucking beat drops. And I'm like, okay, well, this is the way Jada's going to go. So, you know, I'm basically letting them introduce themselves as Freddy and as Jason. That was my idea. So I'm like, all right, cool, I'm going to shoot for this. I do that, right? Now, these are all movie clips, right? To clear that, it's whatever. So Marty's like, well, it's going to be, you know, too long. So we got to do everything original. And I'm like, okay, I know I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I can get it done. But I'm like, all right. How do you make it? How do you do original music now to kind of get as close as you can
without
to the
sued.
Idea, yeah, yeah. Right? I call my engineer Choco, which is in LA, and I'm like, yo, and he's busy, right? And I'm like, fuck. So then I call my other engineer Ed Trendsetter in Miami. He's busy, and I'm like, fuck. So I start looking through my phone. I'm like, who else could I call that I know can play keyboards and do whatever? Ed sends me a number to his boy SP. And SP is a bad keyboard, you know, keyboard player, but he does Latin music. But I'm like, fuck it. As long as I can tell him what I want to play, we could do it. So now this is after a whole bunch of times of us going back and forth. And I get the call like, okay, we got to do this over. 1 a.m, I get this crib, and we're like in this little room. And if you look at my Instagram, you will see pictures of like me in these little studios, and we do the entire thing over. Like, I take the kill, and I make it say kiss. Like, I did that on the mic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we want to do everything over. I get home like around 4 a.m, I send it to Molly. The next day, Molly's like, yo, I just got word from Def Jam that all we got to do is replay the original shit. I'm like, yo, you're killing me right now because, you know, because Fab doesn't really like to change stuff. And I'm like, man, oh. I'm like, okay, no problem. Now I call SP. I'm like, yo, what we did, yeah, I'm still going to pay you, but what we did yesterday, we kind of not going to use it, right? So I'm like, oh, whatever. So I'm like, but now I need you to just replay everything exactly how it is. He's like, damn, bro, whatever. Choco calls me back from LA. I'm like, yo, I need this stuff. Boom, he gets right on it. You know, and Choco's like he's a super geek. He done did all the Wu-Tang albums, shit like that. But he gets to like the real. So of course Choco looks up what fucking violin was played, and so he matches it like eggs. You can't tell the difference.
Right.
Replays the whole shit. I wait 2 days, nothing's happening. I get a call from Mulligan. Yo, the clearance guy at Def Jam, he's a little nervous. He's, you know, we gotta change it up. Yo. Now I make a few changes. I send that back. I don't hear from him again a few times. 3 days ago, I get the text from Fab. Yo. With like eight, yo, with the eight O's.
Yeah.
And mind you, I haven't been going back and forth with Fab. I've been going back and forth with this guy. And he's A&R and he's great, you know, he's doing a great job. And he's in the yo. I'm like, well, this can only mean that the track didn't make it.
Right.
Or, like, it's happening, right? So I'm like, fuck. And he calls me, goes, yo, man, I know y'all been, right, past tense. He's using a past tense words. And I'm like, yo, I don't want to hear nothing past tense. He goes, yo, the changes that, you know, Marl is making, and, you know, I'm not liking the beat now. And I'm like, dude, what do we got to do? I was like, listen, I give you 10 different versions of this thing. It's like the first four bars.
Right.
The guy at Def Jam is flipping out because he's scared to get it, and we got to change that. Now, what Fab doesn't know is that the cable in our house for the past 3 days is fucking off. No internet. Here I go again. I get back on the bike. I'm going to the parking lot to get to my car to try to find internet at like 2 a.m. I get to the parking lot. I just parked my car and I hit the gate. He's like, what happened? I'm like, yo, I gotta do some shit, whatever. Now, mind you, these dudes that work in the parking lot, they don't know why. I never.
No, they think you're a drug dealer.
I'm right? Just, yeah. I'm just like, whatever. So I'm trying to think, where the fuck can I go to get internet right now? I'm like, you know, is this FedEx still open?
Starbucks is closed, right? Yeah.
So, and we're in the Bronx, right? So I walk in and I walk by the office and I'm like, wait, you got internet here? And he's like, yeah, my nigga, don't worry. You know, he's just standing like, what the hell are you going to do? So I open up my laptop, I put my Pro Tools in, and I'm trying to get my engineer on the phone. And he's like, you are a producer. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And I'm sitting telling him who I am. And then he's just standing there like, I'm letting you use my internet. You're going to fucking tell me who you are. So I'm like, I'm Ted Smooth. He puts the face. He was like, I knew it. I knew it. Now he's interviewing me as I'm trying to do this. And I'm like, listen, this is the shit that people don't know. I said, if you want to record this, like me at your fucking parking lot.
Yeah.
Finishing the first track for Jade and Fab's album, by all means. He's like, nah, I'm just going to tell all my friends. They ain't going to believe it. Whatever. So I got Chuck on the phone. I'm like, yo, Chuck, we need to change this. I'm like, just play it like this. So I'm like, bang, bang, like, telling him what to play. He's in L.A. playing it. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'm like, oh, we need three versions because Fab, he wants to pick from whatever. So we do the three versions. We send it to Fab. I'm telling him, like, what's happening. He's fucking laughing, of course. I'm like, God, like, shit ain't funny. I'm trying to make the album. And I send him the three things. Now he's not calling me back because he's doing whatever.
His internet isn't working.
Yeah. Right, his internet. Fab's internet's not working in Brooklyn. Yeah. And then, so in the morning, I get a text from him. He hits me. Then Maul hits me. I'm thinking we good. Maul is like, yo, there's like a rumble in the beat, like a deep bass. Yo, we got to change. I'm like, we got to change the rumble? So apparently the fucking, this guy, the clearance guy, Def Jam, he's like, no, the rumble. They might sue us for the rumble. Oh, my God. Sure enough, I need four versions of this rumble. It's really like, like it's a fucking rumble. So we pitched the rumble up and down four times, send it to him. And it's like, all right, finally we're done.
And that was 40 years ago.
That was 40 years ago.
And then it took them 40 years to actually make this album.
And, yeah, and you know what? Freddy vs. Jason, of course, it has to start with a horror story, right?
Ted Smooth, where are you originally from?
104th Street between Columbus and Amsterdam.
So over here?
Yeah, on the west side.
Yeah, one of us.
Yeah, I'm from the west side, man, yeah.
And how long did you, how many years did you put in over here?
I put it over there. Well, my heyday of playing tag. I was telling I confuse your fucking names.
I'm Eric. And that's Eric. Jeff.
Can we put names tag? Okay, yeah, so I'm gonna just say your brother for this whole thing. Yeah. So I was telling your brother on the elevator. I'm like, I gotta have to say the story again. So I was born in remember Sydenham Hospital?
No,
that's throwback. It closed.
Yeah.
Right. So I was born there somewhere in, I think it's 110th on the west side. And we lived on 104th, right, west side. Mm-hmm. And I lived there too. I was born in 71. Might have been 77.
Yeah.
Right, the blackout. So we had already gotten our acceptance to Wagner Projects in East Harlem, 122nd mm-hmm. and 1st. So a week before the blackout. So we move in. We moved, like, totally.
Yeah.
Packed everything up. Boom, we moved out. I got this amazing picture from like the night before I posted. I got the underwears and just chilling.
Yeah.
So we move, and about 5 days into the move, we're like, hey, let's go back to the house to pick up a few boxes tomorrow. Blackout hits. 2 days after the blackout, we go to 105, I think it is, to pick up these couple of boxes. The entire building is burnt.
Oh.
Burnt, like crispy, like barbecue.
Yeah.
Holy
so
shit.
How close, like, that's, look, see goose pimples, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's like, so that was the story. That was the transition to Wagner Projects in the East Side. So I've been, then I lived on East Harlem basically to, like, I was, I want to say 22.
Yeah, so what's it like growing up over there?
It's awesome. East Harlem is dope. Very cultural, very, very. I want to say segregated, but in a good way. Like, you know, the black guys over there, the Spanish, the Mexicans own 116th Street.
Mm-hmm.
We call it Baby Cancun. So it's very diverse.
Yeah.
Very fun. At 22, 21, I moved to the Bronx because I just wanted to have my own apartment. But I always was in East Harlem. Then I started hanging on 119th Street between 2nd and 3rd in 1985 through sports. Shout out to my best friend at the time, Frank Nitti. He had relationships with people over there, and he brought me to come play a game of wiffle ball. Because I'm like, I don't think I ever lost a wiffle ball game. I'm like a ridiculous pitcher, right? So
you know, you're going to get comments now, people being like, nah. Like,
no, I've challenged people to wiffle ball games to this day. I'm like, no, you cannot hit my shit. Like, there's no pause. Yeah, I'm nice. So we go to play them, and we beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go,
obviously.
Undefeated.
So then we come back, oh, let's play basketball. We beat them in basketball. Okay, so let's play football now. We beat them in football. I'm like, listen, you guys keep inviting me back. I might as well just hang here. So from 85 to you know, not so long, whatever, I 119th Street. Legendary. That's where we did the first old school jams.
Yeah.
All that stuff. So I'm an East Side.
K-Slay grew up over there, right?
Yeah, Slay. Slay was from, why am I blanking out? 105th and 1st. I forget the name of the project. Damn, I forget the name of the project. But anyway, yeah, Slay's from there. And then his apartment, as he became a DJ and all that stuff, was on 118th and 1st Avenue, East Harlem. So that's where he had, like, all those rappers was coming there.
Yeah.
I bumped into a few of them sometimes. But that's where he had his records. And he probably still has that fucking apartment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So Slay is from the East Side. You know, the Black Raw.
Yeah.
We have a little roster.
And did you hang out at 1199?
No. I've never hung out at 1199.
What are you doing right now?
What am I doing? Let's go 1199. Well, the only reason that anybody would go 1199 is to get a chopped cheese from Hunt for the Hajis on 10th. So I never really hung on 1199. I've done a lot of parties there. They had a venue back in the days that was there. So I kind of knew everybody there because me being a DJ at such a young age. So anywhere in East Harlem, I'm moving around. Any project, AK, anywhere.
Yeah.
I know that I don't necessarily have to hang there, but they all, I either played ball with them, played basketball with them,
football,
sports, whatever, or they came to my jams, they came to my parties. Some way, somehow, I was connected. So I was pretty good.
When did you start DJing?
Okay, that's a broad question. So when did I consider, you know, people be like, yeah, you know, when I was six, like, you wasn't doing parties when you were six. Like, come on. Yeah. So,
well, Swiss Beat's son is producing at, like, you know, 4 or 5 years old.
Okay. Assad is the executive producer of my life.
Right. So younger and younger these days. You know?
Right, right. So, okay. I'm going to leave that right there. Yeah. I'm going to leave that right there. So,
Assad does a nice crab scratch.
Yeah, yeah, don't forget it. Assad is the publicist. I consider the day that I became a DJ is when I first got paid for it, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be in 1985. 85 is the first time that I got booked, me, myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got $150, and it was a Sweet 16. And so I would say since 85. But prior to that, the first time I mixed two records, 8, 9 years old, like, I woke up, and my brother had the equipment already in the living room from a house party. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'll do anything for you in good times. I've seen this shit enough. And I mixed the two records. And I was like, oh, I was hooked.
Was your brother pissed that you used his equipment?
No, my brother was never, ever pissed that I, like, used his razor box.
Yeah.
None of that. And you segueing me into a whole nother interview. But, yeah, he only had an issue when I became competition to him, right? Yeah. Later on in the year.
So he was DJing.
Yeah. You guys know who my brother is?
No.
My real brother?
No.
You want to do a drum roll? Or do we just... Because y'all going to be like, no way. You guys heard of the legendary mixtape era DJs G-Bo the Pro and Double R?
Yes.
Double R is my real brother.
Is your real brother?
It's my real older brother.
So no kidding, you were DJing at an early age.
Right. Yeah. So I just... Somebody sent me an interview through the computer. There was no way I wasn't going to become a DJ just based on him being a DJ, right? And then the DJs that influenced him, like DJ Smiley, Ozzy G, that did the house party. So now I'm 5 years old and I got 4 older sisters, 1 older brother. I'm the baby, and they have to take me to this party. So my mother's like, "You're taking the brat with you." So I'm 5, 6 years old in house parties with adults. Mm-hmm.
Were you entertaining?
Absorbing? No, I was not in those parties. At that family parties, I used to get money. I would like dance. There's a specific dance that this was. I don't know who made this name up, and I don't even know how to spell it. So. When I was younger and we used to do the house parties in the Dominican household, it always gets to that point when the little kids go. And I made up this dance. No, I think my brother said the name, and I don't know why. He called the dance the Freaky Pache. I don't know why. But it was a dance. It really hurt my knees Because I would try to do it for you now, but it's just not going to happen. So and everybody would wait for me to just have them and do the freaky pacha dance because it was like some other shit. So I'm like slamming my knees on the floor and jumping up at the same time. It was crazy. So I know they kind of saw the pain and the money would come out. Like, yeah. You just fucking dislocated your kneecap. We're going to throw a couple of dollars.
Yeah.
So I would literally like make a little $20, $30 at the house parties when I was young. But then these house parties that I was getting influenced by looking at these turntables, I was like, fuck, like, it was dope. And then when I finally mixed those two records, I was like, no, I could do it. Like,
so is it the entertainment aspect? Is it like getting that attention, knowing that you're like running the party? Or is it like the music? Or is it a little bit of both?
I mean, it's everything. In the beginning, it was just like, wow, I'm hanging out with the older people, right? And then it goes from that to, wow, people are actually calling me to buy my mixtape. Like, I gotta, let me make these copies. And my Red Mongoose mini mountain bike is legendary in East Harlem, because that shit, I will go everywhere with that. And I would take the two, you know, the TDK cases that came with the 10 tapes. It looked like 20, but they do the sucker shit. They put 10 tapes and then cardboard.
Yeah.
So I would have two of those, one on each handlebar with mixtapes, riding through Taino's everywhere. $10 a pop for the hustlers. It was 20. Yo, put my name in it. 50. So that's a high. That's like an acceptance, you know.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I'm like hearing DJ Starchild, may he rest in peace, and listening to Brucey and Capri, and I'm like, wait a minute, like, these dudes are like at these parties and they're like telling people on the mic like, yo, put your hands up, and they're doing it. Like, I was like, no, like, that's what I want to be. Because you got to understand, I was already hood famous because of the sports.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, at 12 years old, I pitched in the Little League World Series in Puerto Rico. Like, I was nice.
Wait, were you, like, actually 12, or were you, like, Danny Almonte 12?
No, I wasn't Danny Almonte 12.
You're, like, 35.
Actually 12. Listen, my brother taught me everything. My brother was the best older brother. Like, taught me how to throw a curveball, taught me how to throw a screwball. Like, I was throwing these pitches in Pee Wee League, and it was like, who the fuck is this kid, and why does he know all these pitches? So I learned everything. I'm the little brother. The little brother's always better than, because you learn.
That's what I tell Eric all the time.
Like, you're here. That's why you have to have.
Yeah.
You like, and it's great. So, so that's kind of what happened. So, you know, it starts, just the layers start as you get older, and now you're like, oh shit, I gotta quit my job. I'm DJing 7 nights a week and working at the Banana Republic warehouse on 70th and Columbus. I gotta tell you what my day was. At 18, this was my schedule. Wake up, 7 in the morning, eat breakfast, ride my bike, the Mongoose, the Red Mongoose, all the way to the west side, 70th and Columbus, to get to work by 8, work 8 to 5, leave, get home by 6, eat dinner, get the equipment, go do Quasimodos.
Until?
4 in the morning. Bring the equipment back. I did that for 2 months. And finally, and I always give this guy a shout out, because he a lot of, you know, when you get to that crossroad, a lot of people don't get that support. And they, in hindsight, sometimes they make the wrong, it's 50-50.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, I'm 18, I'm like, damn, I'm not quitting my fucking job. Fuck that. This DJ shit could end tomorrow, right? So my manager at the time, Hector, that's the most fun job that I've had, first of all. So we distributed all the clothes to every Banana Republic, right? And everybody had a workstation. You stand up, and he's like a big table, and we'll unload an 18-wheeler of fucking boxes. And so it's a railroad, right? So everybody can talk. So we're snapping. It's the most fun job.
Yeah.
So Hector is at the table at his desk, and he can look. He can see everybody, right? So I'm sleeping, standing up with clothes in my hand. So he looks, and he's like, come here, man. And I'm like, fuck, this nigga caught me. So I go sit down. He was like, listen, man, like, I see what you're doing. Like, we get the mixtapes. Like, you're doing your thing. He's like, and I know you really don't want to. He was like, yo, as long as I'm here, as long as I got a job, you got a job, bro. Go. Don't worry about it.
Man.
And I'm like, what? Took the parachute off. Haven't looked back, right? But the funny thing is, 2 weeks later, he quits. 2 weeks later, he quit to be a fireman. And I'm like, damn, like that shit wasn't even a real deal. Like,
well, if you ever get stuck in a tree,
actors got you.
So I say that to say, he gave me that push and that confidence to be like, you know what? And it was apparently it was a good decision because I'm still a DJ. I still love what I do, and I just happen to get paid for it. It's a blessing.
So, but growing up, you had how many sisters?
4 sisters.
And you had how many brothers?
1 brother.
And you're the youngest?
I'm the baby.
Out of all of them?
I'm the brat. My name was the brat for a long time.
And you had your mom there?
My mom raised all of us.
Yeah. Your dad?
By herself.
Your dad wasn't around.
He used the... You see my Father's Day post this year on Instagram?
No.
Oh, there were people crying. Yeah, my dad was a sucker. You heard the Premium Peters?
I did, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
it got real. And Pete's looking at me like, are you real? And I'm like, yeah, like, no. It's that bad. So what I've done was I've turned that bad situation into, I broke the cycle. Because that's why I'm the dad that I am, to Ty.
Right.
You feel me? So
if you go to your website.
Oh, yeah.
It says DJ. I forget what the middle one was.
Professional dad.
But professional dad was the last part there. And that's right up there. My
dad, I'm saying dad because I don't even have another word, but he was a sucker.
Right.
And, you know, no one should do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever happened with you and my mom, like, that got nothing to do with that.
But your mom was doing both jobs.
Absolutely. My mother's the truth.
For all your sisters,
it's 4 of us, blood related. Yeah. Is my brother and my sister Rosa, they're twins.
Yeah.
And then my sister Rena is under them, and then I'm the youngest. So it's 4 of us in the house. And then my dad had a daughter from another woman. I don't even know if married or not. Mm-hmm. She's older than everybody. So she would be in the house too. And then, we're Dominican. So in Dominican Republic, I have 2 sisters named Rosa. Mm-hmm. You're like, why would that ever happen? So there was a lady in DR that had like 15 kids, and she kept on having babies, and she couldn't take care of none of them. I don't even understand why she would do that. So my mother took a liking to one of the kids and was like, listen, like, I'm just going to take her. Like, you can't. And the lady was like, thank you. Like, you know, so that's my other sister. Wow. Her name is Rosa. We call her Tata. So in total, it was 6. So my mother put all 4 of us Catholic school. You know, none of us have any habits, drink, smoke, none of that. Like, my mother's just a G, like, and she hustled, man. My mother would have the whole East Harlem, like, buying curtains from her. Like, my mother's a hustler. Like, she sold. She's a seamstress. So I said this, I think, in another interview, you know, when the Hawaiian suits were in style.
Yeah.
No one could fuck with me with Hawaiian suits. It was like, I'm like, Hawaiian suits? Like, my mother got the fabric. She's making them right there, like, in 20 minutes. So before a big party, like, everybody cut, yo, they'll bring the fabric. Yo, make me this one. And she would, like, come back in 20 minutes, make a Hawaiian suit, selling them $20, $30. So my mother, she's just a G. She's a G, and can't say nothing bad. Like,
not only did she have to support you guys, you know, money wise, making sure you were on schedule, making sure you were straight, all the everything. She supported your goals.
Yeah. Well, it was. Eventually, you know, she had to give in, right? And I'm gonna say that because it was a little annoying to her, right, at 3 in the morning that. Me and my brother in our bunk beds in a room listening to fucking Special K, Teddy Ted. You know, awesome too.
She did not want to hear that?
No, is that because she was an Ice-T fan? And she was like...
she liked Johnny Ventura, like, and Wilfrido Valga. That was her people. So you know, we would wake her up and, you know, it had nothing to do with DJs. It was just a culture.
Yeah.
You feel me? And it was like, you know, we took a few ass whippings, but we had to tune in. Like, it just was what it was. So eventually, and a lot of people that are, I guess, in careers that the parents don't really see happening, you know, it always gets to that point where it's like, okay, well, I'm paying all the bills now. So what's there to complain about? You dig what I'm saying? So I think my mother always loved what we did. Like, always. She just didn't like the bothersome energy that came with it, right? Rolling in equipment at 4 in the morning in the house. She's going to wake her up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
nobody
yeah.
likes to get woken up. So she didn't like that part. But you know, it just became a little easier. So my Rosa is the first one to leave the house. She
Rosa? Tata?
No, my real sister Rosa. This is the twin. Mm-hmm. So she Morena. We're just gonna say all nicknames right now. So La Morena moves to Florida, right? She's gone. My sister Rina, her nickname is Miosoti or Soti. Mm-hmm. So she gets married, whatever. She moves out. Brother moves out. So it's just me and my mom at this point. So, and I'm running and gunning. I'm getting money. We're doing whatever. So I'm like, okay, well, shit. I'm paying the bills. You don't got to work no more, whatever. My mother never stopped working. She just loves working. And then we had the sewing machine in the house, so she's never going to stop working.
Yeah.
So it became a little easier for her to accept. It's less noise.
Yeah.
I'm a little more careful now how I move. Now it's like I got a storage now, so I ain't got to bring the equipment back to the house. So I understood and I respected that space, and then just got to the point that, you know, she had to accept it. I'm not going to jail. I'm not doing nothing stupid. I'm not out there. You got a pretty cool fucking son.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So never no resistance like that.
It didn't mean that you had to be like, you know, like Hector and become a fireman. You didn't have to like be a lawyer. She was cool with you being a DJ.
And I've always been, and I knock on wood and I been thankful every day. I've always been around older friends. I'm always the youngest guy in the crew. And they really like, you know, I've had my moments. Frank Nitti calls me one day. He's like, yo, come to the house. And I'm going to go to the house. And he has an A for crack. And he's like, yo, just help me put this in the little bottle. I'm like, okay. Not knowing that, you know what I'm saying? Like, so when I found out what I actually did, I'm like, my nigga, I can't be in your house bottling crack with you. Like, that's crazy. So I've had my moments, and it took for these guys to be like, yo, like, nah, like, you know, stay straight.
Right.
We see your talent. We see, you know, if there's any issues or whatever, we'll handle it. I've been blessed.
Say, like, if you want to pursue that crack career, I'm going to encourage you because I want you to follow your dreams.
Okay.
That's good support.
Yeah. That's nice. Awesome. What top do you want? What color? Are we doing blue, red?
Yeah. Well, blue because, you know, I want my own personal brand.
Right. So I've been blessed.
But, okay, so you do the Sweet 16 party. How was your first gig actually go?
And are you Ted Smooth?
I went to Holy Rosary Catholic School till I was to the sixth grade. Then I took a test to go to Isaac Newton, which was like the first science and math unit high school in Manhattan Center on 116th in Pleasant. Passed the test, I go there. From there, I want to go to Manhattan Center because my sister Soti, she was in the first graduating class at Manhattan Center. She was all city in baseball. I knew all the coaches. I'm in my hood. My mother wasn't having that. She was like, no, you're not going to be bringing girls and you're not doing none of that. She makes me take the specialized school test for Stuyvesant Bronx Science in Brooklyn Tech. I take the test. I take the test in like 5 minutes. Why? Because I'm just doing like this. I'm putting anything down. I promise you, I passed the fucking test to go to Brooklyn Tech. Guess what school I'm going to?
Yeah.
I'm in East Harlem. She makes me go to Brooklyn Tech.
How long is that train ride?
45. In the middle of the Decepticons of that culture.
Yeah.
So I'm like, one of my best friends at the time, Andy, age of 106, his mother does the same thing to him. So I'm like, yo, if you go, I go.
Yeah.
We go. Super duper fast forward. Now I'm on the junior varsity basketball team, and I'm going against this kid, Lamont Jones. His nickname is Tick because he was real little, but he was really good. Charles Jones, the professional basketball player, that's his older brother, right? So
Tick was his older brother.
Yeah, Tick is older brother. Okay. So we used to send Charles to the store, like, go get us some bagels. Like, it's crazy. So I'm going at it with this kid in JV, and I'm not going to say who got the best of who, but we was going at it. So then that season is over. Next year, he goes to like five-star camp or wherever he went, and I'm in the hood. My mother ain't got no money to send me nowhere. He comes back fucking 5 inches taller, like, and he's a machine, and I'm like, fuck. So now he's not even Tick no more. Like, I'm the fucking Tick, right?
Right.
So Conrad McCray, may he rest in peace. I don't know if you're in basketball. McNasty,
mm-hmm.
Conrad McCray passed away. That was my best friend. One of my best friends in high school. So Conrad, as a freshman, he could barely walk. He was so clumsy, 6'8". So he goes to camp, two comes back, and now he's nice. So now we're in practice, and me and Tick are doing one-on-one drills, going at each other. My first nickname was Star. Conrad gave everybody nicknames. Mm-hmm. He called me Star because I'm the only white, light-skinned kid on the fucking team. So yeah. I shine, right? Mm-hmm. Star, that's my name. And then my other nickname is Tedster because I used to write graffiti. Mm-hmm. We going at it in the drills. I do a move on Tick. Ah, they all go crazy. Conrad 6'9". He's a clown. Oh, he stopped the practice. Oh, you the smoothest Puerto Rican I know. Mind you, they know I'm Dominican. You the smoothest Puerto Rican I know. You Tez Smooth. Okay. So I got the name from sports.
Yeah.
Like no one, I don't even think Pete asked this. So I got the so you know me, I'm from Harlem, Tez Smooth. The next week I got a fucking jacket.
Yeah.
Tez Smooth. So that's where I got the name.
You have it stitched into your Hawaiian suit?
Right, yeah, no, I didn't really, Olaf wasn't open then. So I'm already Tez Smooth by default through sports. So naturally, when I go do the Sweet 16, I'm Tez Smooth.
I'm so glad you weren't like Ted Ice or something like that.
That would have been horrible. That would have been horrible. So I already was Tez Smooth. And the advantage I had was, here we go again. I got to shout this girl out. Autumn. Shout to Autumn. I love you. She was a Jamaican girl that went to school at Tech too. She played varsity female basketball. So at the lunchroom, you know, the basketball team hangs together, whatever. And, I used to trade tapes with her. She used to give me the rockers, and it ain't reggae, it's rockers. So she would give me the rockers tapes, and I would give it right? We had that little relationship. So I'm coming home, and I'm like listening to fucking Hola Fresh and 2-Year-Old and Animal Belly. And I'm like telling my brother, like, yo. And he's like, I don't listen to that trash. You know, at that time, house music and freestyle music ruled.
Yeah. Right.
My brother was the god. Just never get it fucked up.
Yeah.
The god of that shit. So, unfortunately for him, that from almost like one day to another, that fucking music just vanished.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, all along, I'm collecting. I'm going and buying my little records, buying One Blood and up on 241st.
Yeah.
And Gun Hill. And now I got a little stack of records. And then I got my little stack of hip hop. You feel me?
Yeah.
So now when shit hit the fan,
mm-hmm.
and my brother used to let me like finish the party, he'll be like, go ahead, play your little garbage. And I'm like, okay. So I come with my one crate, play my little reggae, and do my little set. So when One Blood comes out, who has the record? Who has the records? I do.
You have the garbage.
I have the garbage, right? I have the garbage. So now, naturally, people are hearing me like finish off these parties, these house parties, and they're like, but wait a minute, he's the one that got the shit. Now that's the shit.
Yeah.
So naturally now they're calling me. You feel me?
Yeah.
Before it was Double R's little brother. Now it's like, no, we want Tez Smooth.
Tez Smooth, the garbage man.
Right? The garbage man, right? The garbage pack compactor. So I had the advantage. And to me that I've had several changing life, right? Changing moments in my life, and I think that's one of them because I ruled East Harlem. And
Do you own two of those records at the time? Are you like just keeping it going?
No, with reggae music, you don't buy two records. So great, right? Because you don't go back and forth with reggae records. With the hip hop, you do.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I wasn't doing enough Freaky Pacha performances to to buy doubles, right? So I may have had a double of Yes, Y'all In, whatever, one of the Bismarck records, and I might have found it somewhere on there, but no doubles, no nothing. Mm-hmm. We just party.
Yeah,
you're gonna hear one record, another record, and we're gonna party. So already, you gotta understand, I'm seeing Ozzie G, Smiley, my brother, rock parties. So I'm like, guess what I'm gonna fucking do? I'm gonna rock parties. I wasn't around the scratching. I wasn't around that. I was too young to go see Flash, go see these guys, Grandma's Theater. I was too young for that. So right. I wasn't influenced by that. So I'm doing these parties and it was over.
Like, are you nice on the mic?
I've been Tez Smooth since I was 15. You got to understand, the mixtapes I'm listening to are Starchild.
Yeah.
Brucey, Kid Capri. Mm-hmm. I'm saying to myself, well, I can't say what they're saying because that's their stuff. We can't bite. But I know I want to do that. So I got to figure this shit out. I got to figure out how am I going to, what the fuck, Mike? It's not illegal, right? And moving forward, right, to some of the club days, early 1920 years old, and I'm going to say this on record because it's the truth. None of the Spanish Latino DJs dared to talk on the mic because they didn't want to. They were scared of the backlash. Oh, they're gonna say this. I'm talking this fucking mic. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And I opened the door. You can ask any of these guys. Quasimodo's 1992, 92nd Street, 2nd Avenue. They all there lined up like this, watching me fucking become this animal and making it okay, making it acceptable for any fucking deal, no matter if you're Spanish, because that's what we was dealing with. We was dealing with, it was hate, and it's just what it was. So I opened that door, you feel me? And I've always been outspoken. I've always been like a leader. I've always been like, I want to be different. You feel me? Like, I want to be different. So, oh, none of y'all niggas talking? Watch this shit. And I'm grabbing the mic and I'm talking. So I've always had this personality since the Sweet 16.
You were the loudest Puerto Rican.
Well, yeah. The loudest Puerto Rican. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Have you had a situation? Because at that point, you're bringing just a certain number of records, right? Like only a certain number of crates.
I had one crate.
One crate, only so many records in there as you can fit in there. What if someone ahead of you plays the records that you want to play during your set?
Well, back then, it was one DJ. It was one DJ.
You ran the whole night.
It was one DJ. And listen, my crate, just hold that thought. You want to write it down. Let me just give you one that. The first time I met Red Alert, Sunny Acres, upstate Sunny Acres, it was like this fucking lodge. I don't even know. I used to do all the college parties up there. So shout out to Frank. This is another Frank Nitti. Frank Nitti used to do the parties up there. And we used to do the parties at the college, but then they wanted the party longer, whatever. So we're like, you know, we're gonna book this ranch. It was like a fucking ranch, and we're going to do the party longer. So they booked me, and they booked Red Alert. So I've met Red Alert, right, prior to that at the Funk Hut, but he signed my Stanton, Matt, right? So, but I never played with him, much less have a fucking conversation with him. So I'm like, oh shit. Again, I'm from Harlem. I'm okay, that's rad, but fuck that. You know what I mean? Like, he gonna have to, right? So we're in Sunny Acres. I wish I had video. I got a picture. I don't have video. And it's like a fucking lodge. It's just like the makeshift. So the DJ booth is someone's room. It has a bed in it. A big ass plexiglass, right? It's like a 6 foot big plexiglass. It has a bureau. What do you
call
it? Well, in Spanish. I never know what's the
biblioteca,
English.
Si.
No. Everybody press your SAP button. It's a, where you put your clothes at.
Oh.
Yeah.
What is it in English?
Eric won't know. English. Yeah, it's a bureau.
A bureau.
Oh, okay, beautiful. Yeah. We didn't have to ask Siri.
¿Cómo se dice bureau?
Yeah.
Bureau, right?
Yeah.
So there's a bureau there. Clearly someone sleeps there.
Right.
So I went from the one milk crate to now I've graduated to the one big red crate that had the wheels, but it weighed like 200 pounds. So you got to pick your poison. You're either going to carry more records with the wheels or... So I had my niggas with me, so we was all carrying it. So I show up with that. Red shows up with like... I'll probably call him on the phone and see how many crates exactly he had. Red shows up with like, I want to say at least 6 crates. Right? So I'm like, all right. No problem. We're going to go. So the party is to like 5 in the morning. Like it's a late party. So I'm like, okay, so I gotta strategize my shit. Right? So I always, just because I'm competitive, I'm like, you know what? Let's go set for set. Right? Just so we don't go through the uncomfortable, yo, who opening?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah.
fuck that. This is my fucking moment. This is my, I'm the one that does the parties up here, right? Whatever, whatever. So I gotta protect my territory.
Real quick, how much crack were you on?
How much crack was I on? Right, because you gotta be kind of ill to look at Red Alert like, what's up?
Well, also, Frank Nitti was there, so I
don't know. And Frank Nitti was there. No, that's the other Frank Nitti. Oh. The other Frank Nitti. So check it. So I get to talking to Red Alert, and he's like, all right, cool, you know, let's go alpha, alpha, however you want to do. You tell me when you want. We go back and forth. So we rock and we do the party.
That's a power move by Red.
Right. He knows.
Whatever you want to do. Right. Yeah.
So we rocking and we kill the party. So at the end of the night, and please, if anybody has, because I know somebody has video of, I know somebody has videotape of this. At the end of the night, we're in this fucking bedroom, right? And the lights are up. Everybody's kind of leaving. The whole thing, let's go outside. Let's go see where the chicks is at. So we kind of packing up. You know, I'm putting my records back in my thing. Red is packing all his crates up. My man comes in. It might have been Jay Black. I don't know who it was. He's like, yo, play one of... I'm a big Teddy Pendergrass, whatever. So it might have been a Teddy. I think I played a Go With Come On and Go With Me, right?
Yeah.
So I played that record just for us, right? Just my niggas is there. His niggas is there. We just leaving. Yeah,
throwing some Teddy Pendergrass for you and your guy friends, sure.
No, because that's what we used to remember. I always hang with older guys. So that's what we used to ride out to.
Yeah.
So so I play the record. Naturally, Rare goes, what you saying? An hour and a half later.
Oh my God.
I'm 20 years old, whatever. I'm going song for song, Red Alert. We're battling. We're going song for song. The entire crowd is back in the fucking place.
Oh my God.
And there's like Red Alert side and it's my side. So, and the reason why I was able to last, right, with just a certain amount of record, because I always packed albums. Right, I would be like, damn, why am I gonna buy that single when I could buy the album and get more records? So little did he know, like 45 minutes, he's like, yo, you still got records? I'm like, yeah, I'm pulling out albums. Legendary shit. Like, who has done that with Red Alert? Nobody. Like, I battled Red Alert song for song and Sonny Acres. It was, I will never forget it. To this day, we laugh about that day because he was like, where are you pulling these fucking records from? And then it was like, he'll change the genre. And I'm like, oh, I got that over here.
Yeah,
my five. So the Red Crate is legendary. And so that was the advantage. That was the advantage I had. I had the records. And, you know, unfortunately for a lot of DJs that didn't have the vision or, you know, Autumn at high school. They didn't have that vision. And thank God I did, because that put me way ahead.
Well, what was your encyclopedia like for Dominican music?
I think he was talking about the World Book Encyclopedia that was legendary in the house. For Dominican music, for Spanish, you said?
Yeah.
Well, I'm Dominican, so naturally we're synonymous with the house parties, and you know, so my. The Sucker, right? My dad, he was actually a musician. He actually has a record. I think it was the group was called Lo Diplomatico de Haiti. I'm not plugging them because it's not on iTunes.
Right.
But so he was a lead singer, artist, whatever. I would, at 4 or 5 years old, I would go with him to the rehearsals somewhere uptown in some basement, and I would like play the tambora. I was picking up. I can't play no instruments now, but the influence started with my dad, really. So the music, I mean, I don't know who got all the records, but I probably got all those records still. You feel what I'm saying? Yeah. And then we're talking about, you know, Camino Sesto. We're talking about dudes that have been sampled, you know, in hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, that you wouldn't even know to look over there. You feel me? So we was a musical family. We would, you know, I don't know if y'all know about Dominican parties, but they take baby powder and they put it all over the living room because your shoes, you gotta be smooth.
Yeah.
So I come from all of that. And so my library of fucking music is ridiculous. And then the disco shit is coming in. I got the older sisters. So I got like a cheat code. Like, it's kind of unfair.
And your brother's playing like Lisa and Shannon and like.
Right. Like, you guys freestyle? No?
Yeah, sure.
Cynthia?
Yeah.
Like, Cynthia was our neighbor. Like, we grew up, like, I grew up in the best era, 70s, 80s. Like, you can't pay for that.
And you know how to read a crowd.
And well, this is the thing. This is what I tell people. you're not going to know how to play these records if you weren't there. And it's very hard to learn that not being there, because you can't play Poison and then a Tribe Called Quest record. It just, no. Well,
Poison the band or the Velvet DeVoe?
Either. Yeah. Either or. Yeah. Either or. Like,
well, every rose has its thorn. Right. That's a jam.
You can't play records just because the tempo is the same.
Right.
And this is like a whole nother powwow we got to have. I think we got to cook some lasagna for you guys. So, you know, just in educating, just the whole thing, like you just can't do that. And the DJs that, you know, are the A DJs, they know that. Just last Christmas, I did a Christmas party for like a $30 million software company. They were all Indian. If I brought my laptop, I'll show you the Indian folder. Like, yeah. I got friends. Hey, DJ Sharad, you're Indian. I'm doing, you know what? I need some of that. You never know. I you got to do your homework. You got to have all your genres. And you got to look at the damn people. It's not about a lot of DJs. They do a party and it's like, look at me, guys. I'm showing off. No, they paid to come dance. This is like the foundation. They paid to come dance. In my era, by the time you land, not even land quarters. I mean, Pearl, right? The old Octagon, Pearl on Saturday, or Baja. We changed the name. 33rd and 11th. Legendary party. Shout out to John Gung Rivera, my lord, the god of party promotion forever. By the time you park your car, that's 25. You come, I'm putting a hat on, everybody, so you know. You pulling up, you got the hat on, dress code, fam. That's another 20. you want my man to hold it for you? That's 10. Mm. Shout out to Do It Like Diddy. That was his little hustle. He got paid off of that. So now we have $40-something dollars, right?
Yeah.
You got Shorty with you. She ain't got ID. It's another 20. By the time you get in the spot, you had $150. You got your mans with you. Y'all don't want to wait online. Fuck waits online.
Right.
Hit the bounce off. You think they want to come to again, nothing against no, but to watch you scratch two records, right, for yourself?
Right.
No. They want to come dance with the girl they're with.
Give them the hits.
You want to play. Yeah. You.
They want to hear Poison into Tribe Called Quest.
Right. Yeah. They want to hear that, right? So you can fracture your ankle while you're trying to dance the transition.
Yeah.
So this is the essence. Listen, I've posted early Twitter, early Instagram. Genre, crowd recognition, mic skills, scratching, and I forgot the other one. 1 through 5. The caption is, put these in order of importance. It's never, scratching is always the last thing. DJ,
right?
What our job is. If you're in an event, if you're at my old school jam, scratch your fucking brains off. That's what they're there to see that.
Right. Yeah.
But if we're at a party, we're at a club, if they're paying you, they're flying you out, people want to enjoy themselves.
Right.
So that's what I chose to do.
Yeah. So how do you get from, you know, that party with Red Alert to the club scene in New York?
Well, at the time, you got to understand, again, you know, early 80s into 90, 92, we start the era of, I call it the Quasimodo era. Shout out to Jesse Rage, my longtime friend and partner in the party. Nobody was doing, there was nothing happening in New York City but the China Club on Monday. We couldn't go there because we weren't white, number one. We weren't a celebrity, and we don't even have ID to get in there.
I heard you were a star.
Right. Early out. So we like, yo, fuck it. Let's do our own party. So the place was called Quasimodo. It was a bar on 92nd and 2nd Avenue on the left side. Luckily for us, Jesse's brother-in-law was the owner, and he had already sold the place. Right. So his thing was, listen, I got my money, I'll do what the fuck y'all want. Right. And I'm like, fuck it, ain't gonna cost us nothing. Let's go to Kinko's and let's hire Tony Seitz. He's a legend. Tony Seitz is the god of making everybody flyers. He's made, if you get Stretching Barbitos, which my flyer's in there, Tony Seitz made.
I think it's right behind you. Yeah.
Tony Seitz, short black guy. He was such the god. he walked in and he ran Kinko's because he made him so much money because they would print their flyers. So we call Tony Seitz. We make a flyer. At the time, Jesse is driving a blue Toyota MR2, which is a deaf car. It's like two seats. The engine is on your neck. And you probably didn't have a license.
Right.
So we're driving around all up and down the hoods, west side, east side, giving out hand in our flyers, hand in hand, stopping girls to do Quasimodos. First night, about 40 people came out. By the third night, we couldn't do the party because him and I chipped in to knock down the fucking wall that was there because it was in the way of the crowd.
Right.
When I tell you there was dudes coming from Connecticut, from everywhere, hustlers. We had a dice game downstairs. It was like crazy. 600 people. My shirt is off. I'm Sonana. It was too hot.
What did you guys offer that like China Club did not?
Test move.
Yeah.
This is, I'm growing with my crowd. You got to understand.
Yeah.
Test move is DJing. We got a spot. Nobody's going to bother us. Come in. It's all good. We smoking. So I'm 20 years old, 21. That doesn't happen. Channel 4 came. What's going on here? It was nuts. Fire department. It wasn't Hector. Probably one of his teams. The people from across the street, it's Monday fucking, it's Tuesday morning, 5 in the morning. We out there making noise. They start throwing shit. That's kind of what people getting hit with cans and shit. So that's kind of was the demise of Quasimodos, right? But we it lasted for a nice period of time, and then it birthed Nick's on Wednesdays, Border Cafe on Tuesdays. You know who Marvin Ginsburg is?
No. Mm-mm.
You should. He's Jewish.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we didn't see him at the meeting. Yeah.
So it brought, you got to understand, at that time, but 600 people, where is this at? Marvin Ginsburg, a little short Jewish guy, little glasses, comes up with this big-ass bounce at the end of the night, and he tells me, hey, you want to DJ at a big club? And I'm like, who the fuck is this dude? Like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I'm like, yeah, what you got? He goes, I'm about to open this place called Home Base. I got Funk Master Flex.
Yeah.
I'm going to get all the fucking big acts, Naughty My Nature, whoever you want. He heard me play reggae. He heard me. I was like, hell yeah. So, Home Base on Friday nights. I'm upstairs. Upstairs is, nobody's going upstairs. It's Flex is downstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
Got the big group. So, this is how me and Flex meet.
At Home Base.
Yeah, so in 2 weeks, upstairs, 600 people, right? Because that's my dedicated crowd. So, they're going to go wherever I go. He's like, wait a minute. We need you in the main floor. I'm like, you want to do a main or one of them? Hell yeah. I don't know Flex. You know, he's Flex. Fuck the hell y'all want to do? I'm looking to progress. I'm hype. I'm telling everybody. I almost called Tony Seitz. Like, yo, make me a flyer. 4 days later, oh, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, I'm like, what's happening? He's like, well, Flex said if he doesn't do both nights, he's not doing no nights. He did a boss move.
Right, yeah. Right.
And I'm like, fuck that nigga Flex. I ain't the fucking hater. I'm pissed the fuck off. I wanted to step to him, but I didn't. You know what? Fuck that. I just fuck Flex. That was my campaign.
That's what the flyer said?
At the same time, I got this blend on rap number 4 on one of my mixtapes. Remember the Time, Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time that any DJ did a blend with 14, multiple. So I probably did like 14 beats on that legendary blend. You guys know Dante with the big teeth from Downtown Records?
No.
Big music guy. Can't DJ, but he has all the records.
Okay.
That's Dante. I love you, Dante. So Dante runs Downtown Records, the hip hop. So he got all the access, but he can't fucking DJ. So niggas like don't really respect him, but they got to because he got the records. So at the time, I'm going to Downtown Records. And Dante's like, yo, you got to press that. You know, Flex keep asking me for that shit. And, you know, I'm telling him that there's no vinyl. He's like, fucking press it. I'm like, yo, Dante, you press that record, I'm going to fuck you up. You're not pressing shit. Because that gave me how I'm going to get Flex back.
Yeah.
So, oh, he started laughing because he knew where I was going with the story. Yeah. So, fast forward maybe like 6 months, right? Shout out to Adam Torres. Adam Torres does all of the big hip hop events now. Barclays, all that. That was one of the promoters I used to do shit with. Just love him. Congrats on the success. So Adam got a night. You know the Hustler Club on 51st and 12th? That used to be a club. Mm-hmm. It was called Stingrays. Hmm. So he gets that venue. It was on the west side. We're like, oh, we got a west side spot. We doing the night. 600 people, right? The same 600 people. I got their names and everything. Just fucking with you. So we're doing a party for like a month, month and a half. He's like, yo, I want to get a guest DJ. Who should I get to be the guest DJ? I said, get Flex. Get Flex. I know how I'm going to fucking fix him. So long story short, Flex comes. He doesn't know who I am. He doesn't care two shits about me. Yo, I know, I already know what I'm doing. I'm shaking his hand. Yo, rock out. He finishes his set. Yo, good looking. There's a long walkway to get to the end of, to walk out of thing. And I'm waiting like this. I'm waiting. When he gets to the door, do you remember? He was like, he turns around. And he's like, motherfucker. He's looking for this record. He's dying for it. And no one, it's testing when he can put it together. By the time he walked, this is why I love Flexa. By the time he walked back to the booth, he already had his disclaimer. Listen, I didn't know, man. I need that though. And I was like, you know what? I respect that. Right. You know what I mean? So that's how me and Flex met.
Yeah.
You know
oh my saying? God.
Through the mixtape, through that era. And that was just the golden era for places. That's how Gungi walks in. He's, who's the fuck is this man? Gungi's a god. Gungi's doing Emerald City, Club 2000. Who's this fucking, a little kid? What, a young kid? That he comes with his bouncer. He's like, who the fuck are you? And I'm like, who are you? I don't know who you are. Remember, I'm East Side. I'm local, right?
Yeah.
But I'm on my wave. Then I get a call from, you know, DJ Rooster?
No.
Shout out to DJ Rooster, man. He's a cop now, whatever. But anyway, they were from uptown. They got some money together, and they did a party at the Ritz. This is a real fucking club now. At the Ritz.
Yeah.
I forget, 40-something street. They had Nice and Smooth. Somebody else. It was a huge, my first club, my first big. I'm getting these calls, so I'm elevating now because the word getting out. This fucking kid, he playing reggae. He's not even Jamaican. Ah. So I'm like covering all the bases. You know what I'm saying? Like the Jamaican DJs, they respected me because they're like, yo, you know your shit. We don't care. You know your shit. So that's how I'm moving. So it was, you know, a lot of breaking points. Then I get to the Funk Hut. You guys heard of Funk Hut? No?
Only when you mentioned it before.
That's right. Yeah.
So long story short. So the Funk Hut is just legendary. 43rd Street, 10th Avenue. Shout out to Toy and Koi Soldier, the twin sisters. Grandma Funk was the host, and the other one was a photographer. She's a legendary photographer. And Jazzy Joyce was DJing. My boy Choco, shout out to Choco, randomly is walking down the street one day. He picks up a flyer, $5. He goes in. The whole industry is in this party. He gets to the block. He's like, yo, y'all got to come to this party. This shit is popping. I'm like, we start going to the Funk Hut. I'm like, every night, I'm like, fuck, I got to get in this party, man. How the fuck am I going to get in this party? Like, I was just dying to DJ.
You're not DJing. You're just there.
They don't know me. I'm murdering parties, but they don't. The industry doesn't know me.
Well, you hit off the security guy with $30.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, we was doing that because by the time Choco was big body guy. Choco's already the head of security. So he's already in. Mm-hmm. So now we're going. And I'm just trying to figure out how the fuck. And I get a call one day. One night, and it's Choker. He's like, yo, where you at? And I'm like, I'm on a block. He's like, you got your records? You want DJ tonight? I'm like, it's Tuesday? Hell yeah. What? Come. Apparently, Jazzy Joyce, well, she revealed in my interview, she said that she got an opportunity to DJ for some, I forget who, Aaliyah, I forget who it was. So she didn't do the party. What? I fucking raced over there. Shout out to Danny D with the sidekick. He had a sidekick. So he rides me over there. I get the funk hut. And I'm like, oh my, what? Tear this fucking place down every Tuesday. Now I got Red Alert coming to the booth like, oh, what's your name? Like, yo, Red, sign my thing. That's how I met Kickapri, the infamous Kickapri story.
Yeah.
He's walking in there. He's hearing these blends and he's like, and I'm rocking. I got this picture of that night. And the booth is like the size of a quarter of your kitchen, of your small kitchen.
That's right. It's right? Manhattan Mansion.
Right. Yeah. So Kid Capri, I guess he was like, you know what? I got to find out what this fucking dude is. And he comes and he pushes the door and the door kind of like hits me. It's like, so I don't know how Kid Capri's biggest fan, but I don't know how he looks. So I look at him and he got this aggressive face. I got the headphones on. The music is loud. I can't read his lips. And I'm thinking he's talking shit to me. So I'm like, first of all, you fucking a mix up.
Right.
And I slam the door. Right?
In his face.
Right? So Frank Nitti, the crack dealer.
Yeah. Allegedly.
My best friend at the time.
Yeah.
5 minutes later, he comes to the booth. He's like, yo, Kid Capri is here, nigga. You gotta get it crazy. I'm like, what? Where is he at?
Yeah.
He's right there. The guy with the green hoodie, I was like, I just slammed the door. He was like, why would you do that? I'm like, my nigga came and I didn't know. So I'm DJ. I'm like, fuck it. It is what it is. I play another one of my legendary blends, You Are My Lady by Freddie Jackson. You are my lady with the special ed instrumental because I have my little DJI 3000 sampler, right? That I 3 second sample and I loop the special ed.
That's right. Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. Shout out to just. Yeah. So there wasn't no sample. Niggas was using samplers. So me, I'm like, there ain't no instrumental. I'm going to make one. So I play that. And I'm looking at him, and he's like, fuck that. And he's sitting on the couch, and he's walking towards me. And I'm like, what? Okay, he's coming now. So this time, he, like, puts his fingers on the door, like a slow, creepy open. Like,
yeah.
And I'm ready. I'm like, I got my face, like, apologetic, like, my bad.
Yeah.
And he's like, he said, yo, I just want to know your name, man. Like, what is your name? And I was like, oh. I said, it's Ted Smooth. And he shakes my hand, and he goes, yo, keep taking it to him. And he walks away.
Wait, so real quick. You got bigged up by Red Alert. You got bigged up by Funkmaster Flex.
Listen.
You got bigged up
to my path,
by
man.
Kid Capri.
This is
your name is good.
This is legitimate stamps, right? And I'm humbled and I'm like.
And how old are you?
I'm 71. Quasimodo was 93, 21, 22. Yeah. The fucking DJ that I get all this inspiration from just tells me, like, yo, I could have stopped right there. Like, I'm like, what? What the fuck just happened? Again, opportunity. We all get opportunities, but can you make something out of it?
And you are.
And I've always been able to, like, you give me, just put the crack in the wall.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it happen. And it just became a legendary fucking run. You got Bobby Brown outside jumping out the limo with boxers on. This is real shit. Everybody's there. Tip. Everybody. Tim Dog. This is the fucking party. So now I got the East Side. I got the mixtapes going on. The industry knows my mixtape, but they don't know my face. Now they're like, oh, this the fucking test. Wait, you're not black? it was nuts. So once the Fun Cut came and I put that on the books, it was over. What are you gonna tell me?
So like when Jazzy Joyce doesn't show up that one day, is it just that one day or is it now a gig?
Oh no, there was nobody coming on after me. There was no, I shut that shit down.
So, I mean, like, you took her spot, like.
Well, she vacated her spot.
Gotcha.
Choco, because the promoters were like, they were crying. They was literally crying, like, yo, we don't got a DJ. We're going to DJ. Like, I got it. Don't you worry about right. it. Makes the phone call, or he beat me. And yeah. then I called him back on the payphone.
Well, yeah. No, because I was going to ask. Yeah. Man, that's like landline
well, I had
days.
A,
yeah.
I had a brick phone at
you,
the time. Like,
you
I had
did?
The big, yeah, I had the big phone.
Yo, so you were the shit.
Yeah, I sold crack.
Yeah.
Allegedly, with
yeah,
Frank
yeah,
Nitti.
Yeah.
So you got to understand. So I'm looking at it as, oh, no, this is it. Like, I'm going to make sure. And when you look at it, like, that's a fucking layup. This 400 people there that want to party, and I got all the records. That's a fucking layup.
Yo, yeah. Ted, you're 21. You're playing the hottest nights in New York City, and all the DJs now know your name and your face. But how do you not at that point get cocky,
or do you?
Because no, never to this day. Because I'm the youngest of the family. I was raised well. We had this conversation the other day. Who was I talking to? It was a sneaker conversation. And I'm like, nigga, I didn't get I pro players. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't get a new pair of sneakers till my sock was out the sneaker. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. These humble beginnings. So you live that shit. So when you get a dollar, I'm going to ask, yo, anybody need anything first? That's what I'm going to do as a person. I've always separated both. I've always had, you know, I'm Teddy when I come to the house. Mm-hmm. And then I'm Test Move when I'm performing, right? From 10 to 4.
Yeah.
I've always separated that because, again, the OGs, they yo, don't, you know what I mean? They always kept me in line. So I am the most humble, if you want to call, you know, star DJ or legend or whatever, like. And I'm friends with Red Alert. How are you not going to learn that from Red Alert? How are you not going to? So you got to say, it's a cheat code.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah.
And I'm blessed. I'm blessed to have that upbringing where I know how you can quickly go left and right and be in jail, you know, do some dumb shit.
So 93, 94, 95, who is supplying you with records? Who are some of these guys at the record at the record companies who are giving you some vinyl?
Well, at that time, now we're dealing with the hate, right? So because there's always a little hate too, right? So now you got to understand, for those listening, when a box of vinyl, a box of records came 30 pieces in a box, you have gajillion DJs. Who gets the fucking vinyl? You know, so then it becomes a thing. Some DJs were paying for the vinyl. A lot of the shit, I'm going to just keep it 100, and could I get it to this day? A lot of it, in my case, was, you know, like, nah, we ain't fucking with that Oye. We ain't, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just what it was. That's what it was, a very territorial. You feel me? So I had to work really hard and buy the vinyl and hope they got a piece and be cool with Dante. And Dante wasn't giving me no fucking records. I would go, he admitted this years later, I would go to the store and I'm like, yo, I know you got the Domino 12-inch. I know you got it. I ain't got it.
Sweet potato pie?
No, Domino. Oh. Here we go. Everybody was looking for that record.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, so, but when that Remember the Time blend came out, he was my, but then I started getting the records.
Yeah. Right.
So you got to understand what it was. It was a fight. Like, dudes were like, fuck that. If I got to diss you to get in the conversation, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And I understood that because I play sports.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, these kids are coming to my party, and then the next morning I'm playing basketball against them, busting their ass, and they can't even put two and two together because I look like a basketball player, and right. then I look like a DJ the right. next day.
Yeah.
So you got to understand, niggas was not even believing it. Like, Test Move Black. Don't you hear how he's talking? So it's crazy. Let me give you this is and my one of my best friends, George, he's gonna because I didn't want to say this story, but it just comes up. Daniel Marshall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basketball player. Yeah. Shout out to him.
UConn.
So at this time, I am doing. So you guys obviously know the mayor, right? Mayor.
Yes. Sneaker, yeah. Right? Sneakerhead. Yeah.
So mayor used to own a club called Esso's, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just found out that he was. I knew him as another name.
Yeah.
So Esso was, you know, oh, this Biggie. Oh, look at Jay. So we had the Saturday night party there. Crazy.
This is 95, 96.
90, yeah.
Okay.
Around there. So I'm doing Esso's, and Daniel Marshall's manager comes into the party. I'm going crazy. I'm rocking. He's like, yo, Daniel Marshall, he just got his contract, $43 million. Yo, Daniel does his thing in PA. He gets back to the community. You got to do it. He's talking major about me. Okay, boom, George, we work it out. I get over there. I got headphones on my head. I'm behind the turntables. My boy George, he's 6'4", looks black. He's Dominican, but he's dark-skinned. Mm-hmm. He's standing next to me, and his cousin Al is, like, off to the side. Here comes Daniel Marshall. He comes, yo. He puts his hand out to George. He goes, Ted, what's up? So I already had a couple of those instances, so I'm already on red. I'm like, motherfucker. But I understand it. So George goes, why would you think I'm Ted? Like, he got headphones on. He's putting equipment together.
He has a jacket that says Ted Smooth on
right,
the back.
Yeah. Back. Yeah. So Danielle goes, I see it in his face. He's like, oh, kind of fucked up here. So by the time he looks at me, I'm looking at him like with this fucking smirk like, all right. He goes, oh, yo, my bad, whatever. He gives me the check.
$42 million.
It was a $4 million check to your party. George already knows. I go, you know what? Keep your check. Mm. I said, take your check back. I said, at the end of the night, if I don't earn my money, you can keep the check. Right? Because I at that age, I was just taking offense to it. Mm-hmm. You feel me? Mm-hmm. And not only did he give me the check at the end of the night, he gave me two checks. Mm. Right? Just for that.
Yeah.
For that gem that I gave him. Yeah. And I don't think he would never do that again. Yeah, right. But it is what it is.
One was for you and one was for George. It's
so,
fine. Yeah.
Right. So the discrimination was there. Mm-hmm. It was, this is the era, man. This is like the dudes that are the Clark Kents, the dudes that are still nice now. This is what I came up on and through and survived. So, I'm battle tested, man. I'm you put me anywhere in the world.
When your Puerto Rican brother, Big Pun, starts making noise, did you know Big Pun?
Yes, of course.
How did you meet him?
So I knew Pun. They used to all come to my clubs. You feel me? They used to all come to Latin Quarters, China Club. Fat Joe used to come to Quasimodo's. That's how I first met Fat Joe.
Really?
Absolutely. He followed me everywhere because you got to understand.
He got hit by some of that debris that people
all of the hustlers were there. Yeah. Shout out to Kenny, Brooke Ave. I could listen. They were all there. So
did they all want you to shout them out on the mic?
Oh, yeah. Yo.
Do you remember?
50, 100. Like, that was what it was.
That's the hustle, yeah.
All these people were there. Diddy was partying with us like nothing. Latin Quarter on a Sunday.
Latin Quarter that was over here.
96th Street on a Sunday was, they called it the church because it was like everybody goes to church on Sunday. So you have Nori. That's where I met Nori at. Like, Nori came in the booth and he was like, yo, I like you. And I'm like, I'm your biggest fan. He's like, we're fucking friends then. And he would religiously, him, Murder Unit, come Latin Quarter. That was their escape from the industry. Because the Spanish girls were there. So Puff would come, Jay would come, and they all be chilling. And nobody really, they really know them like that.
Yeah.
So they were good there. So, that whole breed was already in. We were friends.
Yeah.
So when I bump into Pun, at parked up at the corner of the Roxy, because we're doing a Roxy now, years past, and he's like sitting in the passenger seat of the 600 big body Benz that he just got. And Pun was, God bless him, rest in peace. He was just a comedian. So I don't see him. I'm coming to my car. The seat is all the way back. Right?
Well, he's a big fella.
Right. Yeah. So then he's like, he's going to Papito. So he was like, y'all was in his bitches. And I was like, yo, it was good money. He got like, a big bag of potato chips. He's like, and it's Pun. Like, how you not going to love Pun? So when I saw his come up. I saw it, and when he took off, like he literally took off, and I wasn't really around him because he was gone. I was doing my thing. Never really got to work with him. You know what I'm saying? Like, but it's like, it's like the same community. And then as Latinos, it's like that extra shit. So it was crazy, like to be there for that.
Yo, talk about like the power of Still Not a Player.
For Pun forever, man. There's no, there's no. I don't know if they sent me or somebody gave me off the books. I was like, what? I mean, Cuban Links. Like, I'm like, these niggas are spitting. Like, this is what I'm talking about. The beating us. Oh, y'all niggas are Dominican?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So there's doo-wop. Now it's like, oh, these Spanish niggas is loading up.
Right.
Right. So now it's a shift.
Yeah.
Right. I was the only for this.
Yeah.
Only Spanish nigga that dared to talk on the mic. You know what I'm saying? And my brother and G-Bo, they never spoke on the mic. Hmm. They never. My brother did the drop. It's DJ Ray, RRR, G-Bo Pro. That's it.
Yeah.
And to their fairness, they didn't want to. be, they didn't want that. They wanted to be just like clever and you know, make a mixtape that's enjoyable.
Right.
They didn't see the lane for talking on a mic with a purpose. And I get it, because these guys were just screaming. So I'm like, nah, I'm a tweak this. I'm a find those pockets and say what I'm going to say. And so I refined it. You feel me? And it opened the doors for the Camillos. These guys weren't even dare to talk. You know, so.
And now Camilo won't shut up.
He won't shut up. Now he won't shut up. Shout out to Camilo, man. That's my brother right there.
Warning.
You hardest know? Working man in show business.
For sure.
So what is your, I assume your mom has not seen you spin at these clubs, right?
My mom, she always came to my birthday parties.
Okay, your birthday
party. So I've had legendary birthday parties in the 90s. You know, I think I still probably hold the record for most money made at Land Quarter, $68,000 at one of my parties. And I don't drink. So, yeah. You know, shout to Batman. You know, he walks in, 30 bottles, and I'm giving bottles away like they're water. Like, Moet, like. That was the type of vibe, and that was the type of money that was around. That was the type of vibe. So, my mother has always been proud, and she's always she came to those parties. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Set up in the VIP, and you know, she getting her love, and she
understands what you do behind that set.
Yeah, she knows, and she, I can see in her face that she's like, you know, like, cause listen. Growing up at Wagner Projects with Wagner Crew and House Committee and all these fucking gangs and shit. And she doesn't know when I'm outside playing. I'm playing basketball with the thugs. Like, so when I'm walking with her, these dudes is like, yo, 10. She's like pulling me like, you know, she didn't get it. She wasn't of the culture like that.
Yeah,
so I think in retrospect, when she sees what I've become, she's like, wow, like he really wanted to do that and really wanted to be a part of that culture.
Yeah.
So my mom's has... I'm still mad at her because, hold on. Remember I told you, I pitched in the Little League World Series.
Yeah.
I threw a one-hitter against Mexico, right? Remember the little yellow cameras, the little Insta cameras?
Yeah.
On the way back from the airport back to New York, my mother left all of the cameras in the cab.
Oh.
I got one blurry picture from me in Puerto Rico on the mound. So wait, to this day, I'm mad at her. But
yeah, we need that camera back.
We need those cameras back.
Yeah,
and we need the video footage from you and Red.
Yes, we need
the laundry list.
We gotta start a GoFundMe for the recovery of these things. So I joke with her all the time. Like, Mom, come on, man.
Well, okay, so I don't want to bring up politics, but I must have to. You beat Mexico.
I threw a one hitter. I didn't say that we lost. So now I must shed light on how we lost. So, I forget the names. So one of our coaches had a son that threw really hard. Fastballs.
Yeah.
But he had no pitch. He didn't know how to pitch, whatever. So the game before that, I was supposed to pitch that game. He puts his son in the game. His son gets rocked.
Nepotism.
His son gets fucking rocked. So now I'm pitching the game to advance.
Yeah.
I forget this kid's name, but I'm really mad at him. And I'll tell you why. So it's a zip game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm throwing a one hitter. We almost scored a few times. And I walk a batter, two outs. The next batter pitched around him. The next batter was some little flimmy dude. Shallow pop up to right field. My right fielder is daydreaming.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you see my face, right?
Nothing's on the line. That's fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's
okay. We turn around. Oh, okay. Yo. If I see that nigga to this day, I'm going to punch him in the face. I didn't see him after that.
People you're going to punch in your face, right?
Yeah.
Your father.
Dad, yeah.
The guy in right field.
The guy in right field for sure.
And anybody else?
No. We'll keep adding on.
Great. Yeah.
So we lose the game. One zip.
A can of corn.
And yo, man. But I had them. They wasn't even. They was like, who is this kid with the rubber arm? Like, but anyway, you know, I've been to therapy for that. Lies.
Wait, but okay. So the tunnel always gets sort of fetishize as like the club of the 90s, yeah, right? Yeah. I want to ask you, since you spent a lot of time at Latin Quarter, which doesn't get a lot of love,
right?
What was the better club for you?
Well, it was happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. So what I would do is I would go to the tunnel early because I was the main DJ at Latin Quarter. So I would go to the tunnel early.
Right. Catch a matinee.
Right. Catch a matinee with Big Cap. Yeah. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
And then I would have to come uptown Latin Quarter. The thing was, and I told Flex this the other day, it was like, I mean, it was literally what it was. The tunnel was a black crowd industry. Mm-hmm. And our crowd was the Spanish people that were in the industry. Mm-hmm. And that's just what it was. You know, eventually some of the black dudes, because, you know, they like Spanish girls, mm-hmm. they kind of figured it out. Wait a minute, man. We got a bunch of niggas over here. There's girls over here. Let's come over there.
Yeah, go to Florida Mayo and then come down
right,
to
yeah, yeah. Yeah, right.
Malecón. Yeah.
So that was the dynamic. So, but it was happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, you know, they don't, you know, a lot of them, I guess the people that do the journalism and do the podcast, but they're kind of from the industry, so they wouldn't know that. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I'm filming my documentary, Shameless Plug. Mm-hmm. And I've been filming.
Is it called Shameless Plug?
No.
Yeah.
It's called Who Is Ted Smooth? For obvious reasons, because there's this
thing. Because people don't know.
Because there's this thing called the Ted Smooth effect that someone, and look who's calling.
Yo, tell him I didn't want to talk to him.
Look who's calling. I'm going to take this call right now. Funk Flex.
Hey, Ted, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. I'm sitting here with the Rosenthals doing an interview for their podcast called It's the Real, and I'm actually talking about the fucking tunnel right now, and you're calling me. What's good? You good?
Yeah, man. I was reaching out to you because, you know, I'm getting ready to ramp this lit digital DJ thing back up.
Okay, that's breaking news on It's the Real.
properly.
I'm going to call you back. Okay, well, Flex hung the phone up for whatever reason. Oh, shit. Okay, well, we'll call Flex back.
Yeah.
Okay, so we spoke him up, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the tunnel, man. I mean, you've heard all this. I don't have to repeat it. It was...
There were co-ed bathrooms.
You had to be there, man. You had to be there. If you're going to go to the bathroom, make sure you got your man with you because you will get robbed. You had to move around right in there. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So
diplomats again, would come with like 150 friends.
Right. Yeah. And I'm going to just say I was fortunate because it's luck. It's pick of the straw. Like, you know, anybody could get robbed. You feel me? So I just, you know, I'm lucky. I just never got robbed and never had no kind of thing in there. But it was great. It was great to have that balance of power.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It was pretty ill. And you know, it's in the books. It's history.
Yeah. I want to get into your production. But before we get into that, you were kind enough to come to our Rockefeller show. And...
Man.
And
I bought 50-yard line seats.
No. But thank you for being there, first of all. But did that night bring any good Rockefeller memories back to your...
Well, yeah, of course, because... You got to understand, like, you wouldn't know this. Like, Dame Dash is from the East Side. Dame Dash went to Isaac Newton, Manhattan Center. Like, Dame Dash could hustle a chocolate milk in school. You feel me? Like, he'd been Dame Dash. And I took a liking to that. And you play sports and whatever. So, 20 West, I'm naming clubs. 20 West, 20th Street between 5th and 6th, another legendary spot. Dame pulled up in the buggy-eyed fucking Benz with the logo on the fucking hood and gave me the test press of him in my lifetime, I think it was. Like, I still got it to this day. Mm. Like, yo, man, see if you could do me the favor. Because you got to understand, the industry is the industry, but the Spanish urban world, I'm the guy.
Yeah.
There was no accent. And Dame was smart enough to know that they matter. They going to spend some money. So I know Dame. Chaka?
Mm-hmm.
I went to school with Chaka. I went to Brooklyn Tech with her. It's my friend. Okay? Yeah. So you got to understand. These, like, I was there. So I'm not, like, Jay is, I mean, I call him Jay, but he's my man. Like, we just talk. You feel me? About nothing about music. It's always about just, yo, how the fam.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I'm Lenny, like, I know all these guys. You feel me? Like, so when I'm sitting there And I think it might have been hip hop. One of them said, "You remember, like,
yeah,
that's humbling." Yeah, that's hot, again, yeah. But come back to the humble. I got nothing to do with this shit. It's all about y'all, and it's all about what's up there. And my name comes up.
Yeah,
humbling, man. That's like, look, I get goosebumps. Yeah. Just that's what keeps me the hunger going. I mean, you know what? That's fucking. They could have named 1,000 dudes up there. My name comes up.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. Number one, it was fucking, I posted that. Y'all niggas raised, y'all raised that fucking bar way up there.
Thank you.
You know what? Now I know where I got to go. You feel me? So it was inspiring for me, being that I'm doing behind the speaker and I'm coming in this space.
Yep.
And then I was happy for y'all.
Oh, thank you.
I'm like, yo, like, and then I'm like, these motherfuckers, how the fuck did they pull this off? Not who your connections are, but the idea. I was telling my man Food earlier today, he was editing. I was like, yo, it ain't. Everybody got cameras. Everybody's at. It's the idea that matters.
Right.
That's what's going to separate you from all these other niggas. Mm-hmm. You feel me? So. Mm-hmm.
No, right. But you know what it is?
Yeah, set the bar.
This is the 100,000 million percent thing. We would have done that if it was just the 12 of us in a room and there was no audience. Like,
yeah.
We care that much about that and that. We could pack a room with people who were just as interested in hearing these stories as us. That meant everything. And now it's recorded forever. So that's...
Okay. Point, right? So when I, you know, the 2 years of planning and scheming and putting this behind a speaker thing together that I'm doing, I'm going for forever.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been this excited about nothing in a while because it's like... To have an idea, to put it together, to actually do it, and to actually get the feedback from the dudes that you look up to that are in this space and get the blessing. Come on, man. Humble pie, like, amazing. All day. So it's exciting for me. I'm like, oh, these niggas. And I'll tell you now, I got a few ideas that I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take that. I'm going to remix that. And we're going to, but no one can take that credit from you. It's documented. That's just done. It's y'all fucking.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
That is why we invited you over here to compliment us.
Yes.
Yeah. So production, when do you start getting into making records?
Very late. When it comes to, I guess, normally when people or when DJs get into production, they usually do it when they're early, yeah. And I just never, it wasn't a passion of mine. I just wanted to DJ and rock out. And I kind of was already doing it because I would do my blends of the mixtapes, and then I would bring the 4-track. The Tascam 424, which I still have. I'll bring that to the party and hook it up, and while I'm DJing, play the fucking blend and. The party's still going. Then that graduated to the mini disc. So now I bring the mini disc. And then the mini disc turned into the DAT. Now I'm bringing the DAT. First time I went to High 97, I bought a DAT player up there because I wanted to play You Are My Lady. I wanted to play Remember the Time for Flex. How can you can't do it?
Right.
You cannot do it on vinyl.
Right.
So I'm like, you know what? I always push technology. I've always, trust me, I went through the hate. Of, oh, you playing CDs, you ain't real. Oh, you this, you that. Oh, turntables, keep it real. And I've always looked at these dudes like, you just not talented, my man. There's but so much that you can do with two turntables. And I'm glad. This platform is going to give this truth that I'm going to say right now, it's proper voice.
Yeah.
So, I'm on my Just Blaze shit right now, but I had to say it.
Yeah.
The Denon 2500 CD player is a CD player that was in Latin quarters. They had it there for the Latin DJs because the Latin DJs were playing on CDs. That CD player had a loop button. It had a loop. You press A, you press B, and it loops. So now, I'm DJing, right? It's just vinyl. And I got all these ideas, and I'm like, damn, how the fuck? I can't. There's only two turntables. Sometimes I've DJed on three turntables just for to have the option of setting up the next record with another record.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that. So I'm like, damn, you know what? I'm going to start looping instrumentals and do live blends, right? I'm doing that already, right? So now, and thank God that I pressed the record button on this night, because many of DJs have taken credit for this shit, and it, y'all niggas are all front right now, and I have the scientific proof to prove it. So now, I'm playing reggae, and I think it was a Buccaneer record, that's the artist. It's called Fade Away. So this record starts with like some classical music. No way, no shape, no fade away. He's like doing opera. And then it breaks into some reggae shit, and it's a dope record. Again, I'm damn near fucking Jamaican at this point, because I'm getting records from shout to Moody's, shout to New Look, Flabbenum. I'm in the trenches. I'm going where... Let me tell you something. I had at Latin Quarters on a Sunday, I had DJs that would give me money to bring them back reggae records, because they didn't want to go up there on my daughter. And I would get to Latin Quarter and start distributing. Oh, you ordered two. Who am I? Here. It was crazy. And I'm looking at this like, yo, y'all scared of what? Like, go up there and get them records.
Right.
So I'm there, and now I'm doing this reggae set, and I wanted to transition from another record to another record. I had a CD in the record that had reggae stuff in it. So I'm like, yo, you know what? I'm a play this One Blood, right? The beginning, so that I can have 5 seconds to change the record and put another record on. So I play the record. I hit One Blood. I'm going to take the record off to grab the other one. I drop the record. So now I'm in my mind, 5, 4, 3. I can't grab the other. You kind of hear it in the booth. I can't get the record. So I go, boop. I loop. Blood. Right? You guys heard that used everywhere in the world by every DJ. The One Blood transition, right?
Yeah.
I go back to get the record. I look up. Look. What are those?
Yeah.
Goosebumps.
Yeah.
2,000 people in Land Quarters got their gun fingers in the air. Blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, shit. I played a Buccaneer record. In my mind, I'm like, yo, what the fuck just happened? I did it by mistake.
Yeah.
Mind you, I forgot that I was recording the tape. So I'm like, yo, I'm going to do that shit again. I'm going to see if it's really a thing.
Right.
So then I'm going, whatever. This is when a Buccaneer record plays. I play the Buccaneer record. I bring it back because, you know, in reggae, you know, they use sound effects.
Yeah.
So I'm they like, say, fuck that. I got my own little thing.
Gunshot means forward.
And liquid means rewind.
Rewind. Right. They got all those things, right? So now I kind of made up my own little thing that I'm using, because, again, I come from forever. You don't want to use nobody's shit. You make it. So I'm like, let me do that shit again. I play it. I loop it. You hear it. It's on the USB.
Yeah.
Live at Latin Quarters. That's the mixtape. Oh, shit. Now, who else can do that? None of y'all niggas could do that, because y'all CD players, you not a real DJ. You on turn. So I'm upgrading. I've upgraded my profile.
Yeah.
Because I'm utilizing technology.
The game can do it for 26 minutes.
Yeah.
The game can do it. So, just for the record,
that was
I brought that to the game.
Yeah.
I invented that. I put that transition into the ball game.
Thank you, technology.
Right.
You know?
Thank you, technology. And then I'm like, oh shit, I recorded that, so I have it documented. So, I've never taken credit for it. Never. Let niggas rock. Whatever. Fast forward something. All right, I'm hearing one too many motherfuckers taking credit for this shit. So I go to SoundCloud and I put up The Truth. I name it The Truth. I type up what happened. I took the clip from and I put that up. It's still up there on SoundCloud somewhere.
Yep.
That's legendary shit.
Yeah.
Right? No. So in joke, and I'd be like, yo, you owe me publishing. Like every now and then, when Flex hits, I'm like, yo, send me something. You feel me? And this is what technology has I've embraced it.
Yeah.
So then fast forward, here come this computer. I'm not gonna say no names. I've got verbal apologies from some of these guys. Like, So one of these guys was like, yo, don't tell anybody I'm on a Serato yet. And I'm like, man, like, what's the big deal? You're still on the actual fucking piece of record. It's not that bad, right. You know? I'm not going to tell you to use the sync button, but, you know, so there's levels of it, and I've always been at the forefront of technology, man, you know, and you got to do that. So I'm saying it right now, officially,
yep.
Every DJ that pushes that button on the computer, you're a push button DJ because you got to push that button to start DJing. Let's just keep it real. You think what I'm saying?
Yes,
like,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's cut all of this. I get that question. Yo, what do you think about it? It's all the same shit.
Right. All right.
It's all the same thing. I will play on a controller as well as I do on Vibe. You won't even know the difference.
We had Green Lantern up here, and he said the first time he went up to Hot 97, he brought all this equipment that he had to, you know, go underneath the booth and plug in and everything.
You got it.
And they looked at him crazy.
No, Mr. C, this is up on YouTube. So Mr. C, one of the times that I wanted to promote the Old School Jam on Hot 97, I went up there and I was like, yo, this is an Old School Jam set. So I brought regular vinyl. I bought Serato.
Mm-hmm.
I bought my controller. I hooked all that shit up.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that flexing across from me, he's on a mic. He can't see it because it's under the window.
Yeah.
After the whole thing, he was like, "Yo, you was playing regular records." And I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "You playing that?" So Missy's like, "Yo, what the hell is this?" And I'm like, "You gonna see what it is?" So I'm playing the fucking Sean Paul dub plate.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, to a regular vinyl. I'm filming this. You see me switching the shit, taking the record, I put it over there. I gave them something different, and you got to do that.
Put on
Did
a show.
Did you play dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, oh, my God.
To make Flex Field home.
Yeah, Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Now, I always play Mardi Gras. In my interview, I asked him Mardi Gras or Daisy Lady, and he almost like called the ambulance.
I can't answer that.
Like,
right.
He eventually
Sophie's choice.
He eventually chose Daisy Lady, but yeah, you gotta.
So he chose wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I mean, yeah. Daisy Lady is his favorite.
So you get into production late, but what did you think that you could bring to the table that no one else was?
Okay, so in 1998, I was like, you know what, man. I had made a few little, you know, break records. I did a record like with Frankie Cutlass. I never got no money for it or whatever. You know, I just wanted to have an actual record. It's on Mascot Records.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some shit. I flipped Heel Up, Wheel Up, Bring It Back, Come With Wine, with some breaks. It was like a break record, like before AVA and shit. So I just started getting into it. And you know, I bought the SP 12,
mm-hmm.
You know, so I had all those machines, and I'm like, I'm gonna start making beats. And then we in the neighborhood, and you know, there's a girl, her name is Lumi D, and she is rapping against these guys, and I'm like, damn, she kicking their ass. I'm like, yo, you want to record something, you know? So boom, we start recording. I don't know what I'm doing. She don't know what she's doing, and we're both honing our craft, you feel me? And then that leads up to, you know, I had a 5-year plan. I'm like, yo, I got 5 years, you know, I'm gonna invest all this money in. And sure enough, in 2003, you know, the Lumi D explosion happens, and it opened the door for me, obviously, to, you know, to be known as a producer, and it gave me that fire, you know. Oh shit, I can actually do this shit, you know.
That record,
you never
was
know.
Humongous.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you talk about record. Getting Busta on the remix?
Oh man, fucking Busta. So so Busta's he's a fucking, he's a Brooklyn nigga, man. I mean, he's from Long Island, but whatever.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
hustler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So at this time, we you know, the whole Straight Face Records thing, that was very organic. That came through literally through our clubs. You gotta remember, I'm DJing all these nights, 2,000-3,000 people a night. So I got a platform to test records. So everything was grassroots. So we built we built her following, you know, literally in front of everybody's faces. So we're already doing shows at this time. We already, you know what I'm saying? So we leave a show in Jersey and my phone rings. It's like 3 a.m. We in a van and I'm like, what's up? Who this? And he's like, yo.
Wait, you picked up a phone call at 3 a.m. not knowing who it was?
Yeah. Come on. I pick up the phone to this day. It could be money on the other side. Or it could be Busta.
Right.
Right. So he's like, yo. He said, yo, Duke. He was like, you know, I'm just going to apologize. You know, I just had to get your number, you know, and I got to be on this record. I'm like, who the fuck is this? He's like, it's Busta Bus, whatever, whatever. I didn't know Busta then. So he's like, listen, man, had to do what I had to do. And I was like, yeah, I'm a big fan. Like, sure, jump on a record. That's how it happened. So sure enough, a few days later, I'm on Twitter, sound Right Track Studio, wherever the fuck is that.
Yeah.
And he sends me his verse over the phone. I'm like, he does the verse. We go do radio. It might have been the next day or whatever to Angie Martinez's show. And was it Angie? I think it was Angie or Sonny, one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And fabulous calls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's hustling. He's like, yo.
Yeah.
So he goes, you know, she's like, yo, we got somebody on the phone. It's Fab. And he put him alive on the air. He's like, yo, man, I need to, you know what I mean? We get the last verse. I mean, yo, it's love. Fab jumps on the record. Very organic. You got to understand, these dudes knew me from DJing.
Yeah.
Feel me? So that's how they knew how to get to me. You feel me? And I've always played that record. I always supported it. So it was almost like, yo, like let us do you this favor. And it was dope. Like,
that's incredible.
Amazing.
The other thing I have to ask about that record is that wasn't the original beat.
No. So, okay, what do you know as uh-oh?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the story. So, Lumi, at the time, we already had a hit record out. It was called Honestly. Well, on the album, it ended up being called Honestly. It was called Never Leave You First. So, I was already thinking ahead. This record was already, like, you know, name that tune when you play one thing. And this record, I would play one note of the record at the club. Dun, dun. And the crazy thing, this is Nori's favorite, one of Nori's favorite records, because she's telling a story about, you know, relationship shit.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's a hood dude and whatever. So they all can relate. The guy listening to that, yeah, I played her. And then the girl's like, oh, it broke my heart. So it's a hit record, right?
Yeah.
And it's already going. So I'm like, damn, I need a remix. I'm preparing, right? So I'm like, you know what? I make this beat. It's like still got some dope drums, but it's like R&B-ish guitars, whatever. So I'm like, yo, come to the studio and let's record this so we can be ready, right? So, and I always, every time I get a chance to take blame for this, I always take the, because it was unfair to her. So we record that version. She records it to that beat in that key, right? So the Diwali rhythm starts getting hot, right? And I'm like, the way I used to do it was I would put her on popular records so that while I'm DJing, I just slide it in. It wouldn't really, and I could test it.
Yeah.
So I'm not really also sacrificing my gig.
That is what she said.
Right.
Yeah.
So funny. So I'm like, yo, let's do some of the Diwali. The Diwali didn't have an instrumental. Well, they had a version, but it was horrible. It had horns and all kind of dumb shit in it. And I'm like, fuck. Okay, I'm in the studio. So I sampled the clap. Just one clap, which is end up being one of my stupidest moves ever. Because I could have just went in the booth and clapped myself and wouldn't have to lose publishing. But whatever, we live and learn. So remember, this is just for the club. This was not intended to be a worldwide hit.
Right. Yeah.
So I take the clap. I put it in the MP in the 2000, and I play, replay it. Chang chaka chang chaka chang chaka chaka chang chaka chang. So I got the groove going, right? it's the simplest beat ever. I do the drums, boom 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 boom. I'm known for my drums, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So now this shit is knocking. It's like, oh, damn, they're blowing the fucking speaker. And my engineer at the time, good friend Ed Trendsetter, dope producer as well. We did the album together. He walks in, he's like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, yo, you know, play shit tonight at Humba.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to do. Humba's a club in the Bronx. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, yo, just do a bass line. Dun, dun. Just follow the drums. So he put the keyboard on, dun, dun. And I'm like, well, this shit is knocking. So I'm like, fuck. I take the vocals from the remix that we've recorded. Again, I'm not a real producer at the time. I'm a DJ. I'm going to just do a blend with it, right? What we do, we take an acapella, we put it on a beat, it rocks, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not listening to key. I fucking know what a key is. I know we got a dope song. She recorded a dope record.
You know who does know what a key is?
Who? Frank Nitti. Yeah. So yeah, you got to see him. He's like this, just waiting for that. I love him. So I go and I take the acapella off of this record that's in another key, and I put it on this fucking record. I got something to play tonight, right? So I can play with the Dwali. I played the record. I got to Rumba. The record wasn't even mixed. I got to Rumba at like 10:30 because I wanted to play early, see how it sounds. There's two waitresses, a busboy, and maybe a security guard. And I'm testing it. By the time the hook came around again, the girl was like, "What's that?"
Mm.
This guy was like, "Yo." I was like, "Oh shit."
Monster.
Why? Because we already had a hit record that was like, "Yo, Nori's on a remix, like crazy." And I'm like, "It's gonna kill it. This record is gonna kill this record." So now, as the CEO of what do you do? Right? It's a good problem, but it's a tough.
Right.
So
I'm like having too much pitching.
I'm like, you know, yeah, like, yeah. You know, so I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Play it. See what happens. Over. Ball game. You feel me? And so that's, she took so much criticism, and because she can't sing, she's all off key, right? But she didn't know no better either. She didn't record her vocals to that beat.
Right.
Had she done that, we would have done it on key, obviously, but I did that. Like, I did a DJ blend. That's what it was.
But it was a monster.
Yeah.
Right. But
that's the other thing.
But for the purists, like for the R&B singers, they're like, "Oh, she's off key." There was a bunch of hate on Lumi. Like, you know, she's 19.
Yeah.
They were coming for her. You know what I'm saying? Just because she had her record and people just was hating. But on top of that, that was always like that little angle, like, "Oh, she's singing off key." And again, to this day, like, I take full blame for that because I didn't even know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? We're good off of that record.
I'm sorry you created a hit song.
Yeah, right. My bad. Yeah. Right?
But also, like, thinking by the vocal, then it almost sounds like a freestyle record because it's off key.
I am glad you said that. Listen to me. So, we were, you know, like not producing as a freestyle artist, but that was like our lane. Like, you know what? She's gonna get that audience. And it's crazy that it's almost like you was in the room when I was talking about it years ago.
Guess
like,
what?
I was there with Frank Nitti. So that was kind of her vibe and her writing, exceptional writer, right? And that was the way, that's the felt, the texture of her voice. We never said she was Mariah Carey, but we can keep her in this little lane that it's going to work. And guess what? The people that buy records, they don't give three shits. They just want a melody, a nice beat, and they want to sing along.
Yeah, when I downloaded it off of Napster, like, I downloaded it, and I was happy with it.
Yeah. Yo, so, you know. Who
are some of the names who reached out just reacting to that record and like, "Yo, you're on to something, and like, we need to work together"?
Everybody. Like, I would leave so many people out.
Your phone wouldn't stop ringing. Your pager wouldn't stop buzzing.
It was that's, you know, that's when you realize the other side of the game, you know, and
well, at that point too, they probably want you to recreate that, right?
Oh no, the infamous, you know, Puff calls me, and he's like, you know, "Yo, we want to do a remix for Missy, you know, for the Bad Boy soundtrack," and I'm like, "Oh, that's great." You know, our album comes out June 24th, right? The soundtrack comes out August, whatever. I'm like, perfect. I don't know no better. I don't see the move. This is Puff.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate
kingpin
gangster of the contract, right? So I'm excited, but at the same time, I'm like, you know what? Let me call the red phone. Let me call my guys.
Yeah.
And so I tell, you know, people what's going on. So when he calls me, I'm like, "Yo, how you got my number? I don't worry about that, Playboy. Whatever. I'm like, "Yo, you know what? Let's talk about it." In his mind, he heard, "Okay, it's done. We're going to do it, right?" So after I figure out what the move was, I'm like, "Oh, no, we're not going to do that." So I called him, yo, Puff, you know, nah, we ain't, you know. What you mean, man? Yeah, you said you was going, ah, he started going crazy on me. I hang the phone up. I had to bang it on him. Pause. I had to hang up, and I'm like, yo, Puff, like, come on, man. Like, you know? So that was a legendary phone because he's like, yo, I'm saying, oh, you, I get Sherry Dennis to just cover the shit, and you know what I mean? And gangster, you like that. I was like, Puff, I will send you the session so that you can try to cover this record. Like, no one's going to sound like Lumi. You know what I mean? Like, I dare you. You're going to look crazy doing that. Yeah. So just it just is what it is. Like, you know what I mean? My bad. And you know, we just can't do it.
Yeah.
And he was like, you're right, you're right, you're right. And whatever. So everybody was calling. From all over. I got a song with Paulina Rubio, for crying out loud.
Really?
You know who Paulina Rubio is?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, she was supposed to be like the new, right?
Crazy.
Yeah.
She's legendary. Like, she was in Queens in our studio. Like, I bought her grapes and cheese and shit. I'm like, what do you get a person at that caliber? Are you crackers? What? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it got crazy. And you know what? The experience was awesome. I learned so much. Seeing the world, you know, continue to see the world, met so many great people, and just learn from it. And when we went our separate ways, it was like, all right, you know, it is what it is. My daughter was actually about to be born at the same time, so it was kind of like a blessing in disguise. And I'm like, you know what, I need to slow it up anyway. Like, I need to, you know. So around 2 years. 2005, 2006, a good friend of mine that knows me since I was like 5 years old, that used to hang on my older brother by the name of Voice of Harlem, he has a record called Chicken Noodle Soup that he's on.
Mm-hmm. DJ Webstar.
Right. Yeah. On Webstar's record. Yeah. So I was part of this legendary basketball tournament called Together We Chill. Shout out to G Bush, shout out to Big Dot. On East Harlem, we did that tournament for like 19 years. At that time, it was the number one tournament, 2008-2009. Pop Champagne, I broke that record there. I broke many records there. And so I'm in that culture. I'm in the basketball, street basketball. I'm in that culture. So, and I know Voice. He's family. So I'm sitting there. I'm looking at this. I'm like, he got no idea. He has no idea what they really want to do. So I put him to the side. I'm like, listen, man, I know you don't even know what ASCAP is. So I'm going to meet me in the morning, take you to ASCAP, get your business right.
Was he a BMI guy?
He was none. He didn't know nothing. So I'm like, you need your own record. Like, this is not a group. You think it's not that. Webb is going to do his thing, and everybody going to do their thing. You need your own record. He's like, well, I don't know how to record. Like, I just went in the booth one time and I did something and I left. That was Chicken Noodle Soup. I was like, just come and I'm going to produce the record. I just need you to show up. So he shows up. Now, at the time, no music. That was the thing in Harlem, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, this is a record. Like, why nobody? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I already know the record that we're going to make. So Voice comes. This is how God works. I had a beat I made for Nori. And I sent it to him. He didn't like it. I had that beat in my iTunes. And I put 5 beats on iTunes to burn a CD for Voice of Harlem. You know iTunes, when you check off something, it won't burn it?
Yeah.
So that beat was a 6 beat, and I thought I checked it off, and I didn't. So it was on the CD. I would have never given him that beat. It just doesn't sound like fun. It don't sound like it. So to this day, I credit him for that. He calls me the next day, yo, I want to use the beat number 6. I'm like, there ain't no number 6. Bugging the fuck, what's wrong with you? I play the CD. I'm like, that? I'm like, that's not even for you. Like, it. You know what? Bring the fucking beat.
Yeah.
Sure enough, put the beat up. I go, okay, you know what? Go in the booth. I'm gonna record you 4 times for 4 minutes. Say, because he's very good at off the top of his head. He doesn't write shit. Mm-hmm. Now he probably writes whatever.
Yeah.
He goes and he's just saying all kind of shit. dope lines. And I'm like, He comes back out. He's sitting there. So what you guys know as No Music or Hall of March, those verses, that's like a line from the first take, another line from the fourth. It's like Frankenstein. He'll tell you the story. By the time I finished creating these verses, he was like, yo, what the fuck you just did? I was like, I produced the fucking record. Like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
This is the magic. You feel me? Like, people don't come in there. Some people do, some people don't. So I structured a record, and I'm like, yo, that's the hook. No, I mean, he was like, well, I'm going to do the fucking hook. The next day, I play it at Kingdome. To this day, legend, classic record. No one knows I did it, right? Hence the documentary, Who Was Tets Move?
Yeah.
Although he says my name in the beginning of the record.
Yeah.
Tets Move, straight face, you remember? Along with, which ends up being my tagline.
Yeah, yeah.
All because I didn't check that fucking, right? So this is why I'm so hung. Like, these things are happening and it's like, it's God's doing, man. Like, these opportunities is crazy. I don't check that record. That record never had. It doesn't exist. Think about that.
Crazy.
You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, you know, that to this day, that record is, I have teacher friends of mine that randomly call me like, this fucking record, the kids, they come out of recess, they don't want to play basketball, they want to do, they want to dance for an hour, like, yo, my bad, like, whatever. It's just a legendary record.
Yeah.
And I think this year was the 10-year anniversary, but I got a little busy, but next year I'm going to, I never put that record out. It's never been officially out.
Right.
Like, it's an original beat. I own the record. Like, it's never been out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? I think it's time to get a few movie placements or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, because the beat is a classic fucking record. So, you know, I'm going to do that. And that's it. I mean, I've done many records. You know.
And you're the remix king.
I mean, yeah. You said it.
Not just me, but
Eric, you made it up.
That's right. What set the standard for you?
Well, again, this all goes back to the era of the pressure of, you know, the mixtapes. When you putting out a mixtape and SNS got one out, Dua got one out, Kick Capri got one out, Brucey got one out, Starchild got one out, Double R got one. How is your mixtape gonna survive? Chill Wolf and the East Side. I could go on for days. Triple C. Mm-hmm. What Ron G, what defined the mixtapes was the first record, that blend, the intro, whatever you did on the top of that mixtape determined which mixtape Rock and Will was going to call you for, or which mixtape was going to run the summer. So that pressure, and again, I'll take it even further, the pressure, the sports, that I was immune to pressure a long time ago. So it was like, I know what the fuck I gotta do. Y'all niggas just thinking about it. Anything in life, you're judged on. Anybody could get lucky, win the lotto. Can you win it twice? Can you do it three times? Can you do it again? One more time.
Yeah.
So my consistency is what made my lane, made the crown fit the right way.
Yeah.
Because that's what people care about. I don't care. You had a good podcast. What's the next podcast?
Right.
They don't care. Right. So
people love our podcast every week.
Either way, you have replay value. So I bring that into the answer because I've been able to. The hardest thing to do is to make something that's already great better, right? So I've been able to consistently do that, and it's almost like, I mean, you talk to Maino, he's like, you're the reinvigorator. He says a funny word, but it's like, it's a real difficult thing to do. And Love on Top was already a hit record.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make that better? It's Beyonce. We talking about Beyonce, right? Here.
Yeah,
you feel me? To be able to do that, mind you. Before that, it was Blame It. Blame It was a hit record already. To make it better, I mean, shout to Jamie Foxx, but you don't hear that regular record no more. It's crazy, and I've been able to do that time and time again. Adorn.
Mm-hmm.
Puff is a smart fucking guy.
Yeah, wait. So when you're doing these records, who reaches out to you? Or are you just like, I fuck with that record and I'm going to do it and then hopefully they like it?
I'm going to answer that, but let me just say why I say Puff is a smart guy.
Okay.
Because I sent that to Puff because of the music that I used. And I told Puff, I said, yo, I don't want Diddy on this record. I want Puff Daddy. Mm-hmm. I want nigga, I know. Mm-hmm. Put the toothpick in you. Go to the booth. I need that. He was like, I got you, Playboy. But then he's smart enough to know that French Montana is his artist. And I wake up to a call at 6 in the morning. Yo, Playboy, I got something for you. And his friend's laughing. They know they just got on a fucking bomb. You feel me?
Yeah.
When I put that record out, Miguel's record was already number one. And we almost shot the video, but Puff had the accident with his leg somewhere fuck he was. And we was going to go to Atlanta. It was the whole thing. And we never got to do it. That would have been amazing. Miguel's like, yo, this shit is fire.
Yeah.
So that's why I say Puff is smart, because he is.
Yeah.
Sometimes they show up to the club and it's a bag of money. And they're like, yo, okay. I mean, I've had to meet certain people in certain places. Yo, go see my man. Mm-hmm. That's how we do. I'll do that business too. No problem. Mm-hmm. And then you have Beyonce, right? So I go and I do that remix, and I kind of know that record labels like to get the most spins on certain weekends. Am I messing up with this banging the table? Okay, no. So I'm like, you know what? I've done a few things for using Beyonce stuff and whatever. I said, this one, they're going to have to call me. Mm-hmm. And I kind of set it up where I gave that remix to 5 DJs. And I had a conversation with them. I was like, listen, I'm going to give y'all this record because everybody wants it. You can't give it to nobody. Because if I hear somebody with a record, I know it's one of y'all 5, and I'm coming to fight one of y'all 5 dudes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So work with me because I'm trying to do something here. They're like, yo, we just want it. They go crazy for a week. Lo and behold, like, shout to Footy, my nigga Footy from Sony. Thursday, before he's like, yo, come on, man. Like, we need that record, man. Like, and I'm like, what you talking about? He's like, yo, come on, I said, Footy, I gotta come in the office, man.
Because that's all they hear on the radio.
We gotta have a sit down. You know, say he's like, yo, I don't care. I just need to get you in the office. I go to the office.
And they serve you with a C&D.
I go in the office and, oh no, they were smart. I go in the office and shout out to Ayalit, super cool. I had done business with her already, so she was like, okay, man, what's up? Like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, yo, like, you know. So she calls some other older black lady. I don't even know who she was. She walks into the room. She has a fur on. She's a good-looking lady, too. She walks in.
Was it Beyonce?
It wasn't Beyonce. It wasn't her mother, either.
I was just going to say, yeah.
She walks in, and she's like, you know, because I sampled the Kizo Kane, and that's like a big roller skate, but it's a Chicago record. So I think she was like, what you know about that? And I was like, I obviously know about it if I used it and put it on a record. So she's like, she takes her fur off. She starts doing a little dance. She's like, oh, we need this. She takes her coat. She says, just give him whatever it is. Right? So I'm like, oh, whatever it is. Okay. So I write down whatever it is. She goes, okay, you heard her. She goes, we're going to call you tomorrow. We got to send it to Beyonce just so she can approve it, da, 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 whatever. The next day, she loves it. It's the official remix. So
crazy.
Just for the record, because yo, is it official? Yeah, like Beyonce, they don't play that. Beyonce. All right, we got to sign off. We got to make so she uses that to shows and shit like that. So it's a remix, but it's really a classic record. Like,
yeah.
It's a record. It's you know, shout to Jermaine Dupri, but it has taken the Jagged Edge, Let's Get Married record. It's like Love on Top is the wedding record. It's just it's classic. You can't, you know. So that's how it be happening. Sometimes, you know, a Buster calls. Mm-hmm. Yo, your Buster got the album coming out with Samsung. Yo, we need joint. Okay, first single, bang. Oh, matter of way, I got this other beat. Get Gucci Mane on it. Boom, second single. It's relationships. It's, yeah.
Does Busta only call at 3 o'clock in the morning from an unlisted number?
Busta only calls from 3 to 3:45 in the morning, no matter where he's at. But let me tell you how real Busta Rhymes is. I did the Lady Gaga Just Dance, the remix for that, and he was in Belgium on his tour bus, and I called him. I didn't know where he was. He was like, yo, as soon as I give the bus, I'm going to party that. So, you know, and he's Busta, right? He's,
yeah.
But he's very, his feet are very... very much underground, mm-hmm. and he knows what it is. So shout out to everybody. I mean, I'm blessed, man. Like Vado, Swiss, Alicia Keys, like
yeah.
Alicia
yeah,
Keys.
You did the No One remix.
I did No One. Cassidy, you know, Swiss, boom, and she's like, yo, I love it. Can you please allow me to play the piano? That's all I want to do. I'm like, where do you want me to ship the piano to? You know what I mean? So. Oh man, that's blessings right there. So she played the actual piano on that remix.
Crazy.
I don't forget shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it's endless. I came bearing gifts. You guys each have your own Testmove USB card.
Thank you very much.
All the remixes on it, all the mixtapes,
and the Latin Quarter recording.
And the Latin Quarter recording.
By the way, you know what Latin Quarter is now?
What?
A Rite Aid.
Yeah, a big Rite Aid.
Yeah.
A big Rite Aid.
Yo, Ted Smooth, your name is good in these streets, but you're always star to us, all right?
I'm a fan.
Yo, Ted, thank you so much for coming through. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate you.
Shout out to the doorman. He didn't give me no ID check, no nothing.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, if people want to find out more about us, we are It's The Real. If people want to find out more about this podcast, A Waste of Time with It's The Real, if people want to find out which one of us is Jeff and which one of us is Eric, where can they go?
You can go and find us in the Poconos. That's where we will be for Thanksgiving. So fuck you to Aruba, Jamaica, who I want to take you, we will be in the Poconos. If you want to find our podcast, we are on soundcloud.com/A Waste of Time. We are also on iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real. If you want to find our music, it is on soundcloud.com/It's The Real. It is also on all streaming services, including Spotify. Search for Teddy Bear Fresh by It's The Real. If you want to find us on Instagram at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real, Twitter at It's The Real. We are also on Snapchat at It's The Real, and on Twitch at It's The Real, It's The Real. We haven't used Twitch yet, but we have our name there.
Jeff, you know this podcast is not going anywhere, not even to the Poconos, unless we tell people to spread the word. Jeff, who would you like to shout?
I want to shout out Raj, as in at one fresh fella on Twitter, who said, y'all are the truth. I met Jeff in some random New York club over the summer, and it was almost more impactful than meeting Heatmakers that same weekend at the opening of the Fool's Gold store.
Well, that's very nice.
That is very nice.
I would like to shout out Jeff Charlie Marley at Los Def _.
Yeah.
He said, so I was skimming through to see what I was listening to next and noticed you guys actually got Big Face Gary on the podcast. Fucking amazing. Side note, I'm like 20 episodes in. Here's to another 20 and another 20 after that. Guys, we really, really appreciate you. We are so thankful for all of you. Have a great Thanksgiving with all of your families or without your families or whatever you're doing. Not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week.